Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
Red lights are around the table. We dance where we're able. We'll routine to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how do you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how do you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons.
Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Hey, King Shazam the Turbo! All rise for King Shazam the Turbo and the Knights of the Round Table!
Hey, Susie Q, what's cooking with you?
Your teeth look whiter than new, new, new.
My teeth aren't new, but my toothpaste is new Pepsodent. Get with it, kids. New package, new flavor, new formula, too, means brighter smiles for me and you.
You'll wonder where the yellow went when you brush your teeth with Pepsodent. The new formula with IMP gets teeth much whiter. You can see it cleans the stains and film away while Irium fights tooth decay.
You'll wonder where the yellow
yellow went when you brush your teeth with Pepsodent. The taste is new, so fresh and clean. That new taste really lasts, it's keen. And while it makes your smile a rave, it also makes your breath behave. So start going steady right away with Pepsodent. Get some today. You'll wonder where the yellow went when you brush your teeth with Pepsodent. Pepsodent, Pepsodent.
Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air. Rubinoff and his violin. Hugh Conrad, suggesting that for complete... And the orchestra carry on with the overture. As a solo selection, Rubinoff draws the bow across his Stradivarius to play Green Eyes in his own inimitable style. We present Rubinoff and his violin.
We're on the air. Let's see how the broadcast gets from the studio to your home. Of course, you don't hear the real sounds over your home radio. What you hear is a translation of the sound. Sound travels in waves. The picture of a sound wave, if we could see it, would look very much like this. These sound waves, made by the musical instruments, travel in all directions at once. Some of them are hitting that microphone and being picked up by it. The microphone is simply an electrical ear, the ear of the broadcast listeners. It picks up sound waves and converts them into electrical currents. The operation of the microphone is very similar to the telephone in your home. any sound, such as music or a voice, pushes this metal ribbon back and forth, causing a corresponding back and forth movement in an electrical current. When I say one, the ribbon moves back and forth. Watch again. One. This action of the ribbon sends an electrical current along the wire that leads from the microphone. If I say one, two, three, four, the ribbon dances back and forth a lot of times and sends a lot of different currents down the wire. All the electrical currents from all the microphones are controlled and sent out to the transmitting stations. These currents form what we call the audio wave, a wave you can hear. The audio wave still looks like this after it has been changed into electrical current. We want to make this wave stronger, so we amplify it here in the studio control room and again in the master control room. Each time we amplify it, the wave looks a little bigger, like this. Now this wave must travel over wires to the transmitting station hundreds and sometimes thousands of miles from the studio.
Robanoff and the orchestra now offer for your entertainment a rhythmic arrangement of Spring, Beautiful Spring.
The audio wave coming over wires from the studio is amplified again immediately after it reaches the transmitter. But the trouble with this wave is that it can't carry itself anywhere. So we have to produce another wave that will travel long distances and carry the audio wave with it. The audio wave looks like small water waves. It will only go a short distance, getting weaker and weaker, and finally dying out. In water, little waves can travel a long way if they hitch a ride on a larger wave. So for radio, we make a larger, more powerful wave to carry the little waves. This carrier wave is made by what we call the oscillator. The oscillator acts like an electric pump, producing smooth and steady power that looks like this. When the wave made by the orchestra goes into the transmitter, it is put together with the carrier wave by a process called modulation. The modulator controls the flow of the carrier wave and impresses on this flow the music of the orchestra so that the combination looks like this. The carrier wave supplies the power, and the wave made in the microphone writes its signature on it. The result is the radio wave. Now comes the job of making this radio wave strong enough so that it will get to your radio. In order that you may hear it, we have to amplify the current in these big tubes gradually through several stages. In the first stage, the wave looks a little bigger. Then it gets still bigger, more powerful. And finally, it thunders out of the power strong enough to carry it over a wide radius. This radio wave is then sent to the antenna from which it is released. It leaves the antenna as vibrations and travels in all directions with the speed of light. The wave spreads out for hundreds of miles. And finally, your own aerial picks up a small amount of the original vibrations. Radio waves from many programs are being picked up by your radio all the time. You can select anyone you wish by merely tuning in your set to receive the same number of vibrations as a particular station is broadcasting. The radio wave is picked up by the aerial on your car and is carried into the radio set. This wave is still a combination of sound and carrier waves, and your radio set must separate them. This is done in a little device called a detector tube. You've seen one in your own radio. This detector cuts off the bottom part of the wave so that if we follow the top line of what's left, we have an audio current wave exactly like the one we made in the studio. Then the other tubes amplify this current. And as it reaches your loudspeaker, it moves the diaphragm back and forth and is translated into a very good likeness of the sounds you would hear in the studio. Listen.
You are invited to listen to this program at the same time next week when we will again present Robanoff and his violin.
More than 75 years ago, a man invented the telephone. His name was Alexander Graham Bell. Everybody knows that. But who knows precisely what Mr. Bell had in mind for his ingenious new device? Who knows?
Homicide. Donegan speaking. Yeah? Be right over.
At the tone, the time will be 5:05 exactly.
Hello, Mom.
Danny, you're home. Do you think this is her first husband? Oh, Lucia!
Tell me more.
Well, I'm not one to talk, but...
The number you have dialed has been disconnected. This is a recording.
Besides, there's more in life than boys. Oh, I must read you a note I got from Herbie. It'll only take a few minutes. Yes, Daddy. I'll call you later.
Of all the cockeyed times for the phone to ring. All right, I'll be there. I'm coming!
The telephone. Few products of man's ingenuity have been so widely used and misused. Today, everybody knows everything about the telephone. But who knows what Mr. Bell had in mind? Also, what he did not have in mind. Here, for example, is Agatha Fewsmith. She's calling a Mrs. Evans about the local church bazaar. But if you were Mrs. Evans, you'd never know it. For some reason, Agatha can't get to the point. The weather leads to summer colds, and summer colds to that nice new doctor in the church membership. And Mrs. Evans is just confused. What's this all about, anyway? And when is it going to end? Now, by this time, Mrs. Evans feels trapped. And perhaps even a little bitter about the telephone.
Oh, that woman. Well, I never.
Mr. Bell did not have this in mind. But what he did have in mind is so easily accomplished. All it takes is a little organizing. That makes it easier on you, and it makes for a quicker, more pleasant way of getting things done. Precisely what Mr. Bell had in mind. That's even more important in the big, busy world of business. Yet, in his wildest imagination, Mr. Bell would never have conceived anything like the use salesman Sam Black is making of the telephone.
That's just one important feature, Mr. Reynolds. Now, let's talk about the powertrain. Powertrain. That's the engine, the transmission, the rear axle. Well, sure, every car's got them.
But the important thing is this.
Yeah.
Sounds real interested, doesn't he? Mr. Bell definitely did not have this in mind. It's unstrategic for two reasons. First of all, you can't really sell a complicated piece of equipment over the telephone. Whatever your product, your prospect has to see its features and see them demonstrated to appreciate them. More important, your prospect has to understand your product's benefits to him before he'll buy. And it's simply too easy to say no over the telephone. In fact, it doesn't take any effort at all. But where does the telephone fit in here? Well, what Mr. Bell had in mind for the telephone was not keeping people apart, but getting them together. using the telephones to establish an opportunity to do a good selling job, or to bring your prospect into the right selling atmosphere. But here's another example of something Mr. Bell would frown on. This energetic young man is Pete Wilson. And believe it or not, he's fairly intelligent, too. He's an air conditioner salesman. And he shrewdly figured out a sales plan. There must be a tremendous concentrated market for air conditioners. All he has to do is cover that market like a blanket. Mr. Bell would approve the determination, but he did not have such a pedestrian approach in mind. Pete has completely overlooked the whole point of Mr. Bell's invention. With time-saving telephone calls, our young salesman can quickly determine his air conditioner market. Who is a potential prospect, and who is not. And Pete's ready to concentrate his selling time and energy on real prospects. That's when the telephone can really be an extra sales tool to help any salesman create selling opportunities. For instance, with his telephone and an owner list, a service file, or a registration list, depending on his field, a good salesman can literally ring hundreds of prospect bells right from his own office. And, of course, using the telephone strategically like this is just what Mr. Bell had in mind. Yet even when the telephone is used strategically, unfortunate things happen that Mr. Bell did not have in mind. For example...
Hello.
Mr. Carson, this is Wally Smith, Dependable Life Insurance Company. With that new home of yours, I'm sure you'll want dependable insurance protection.
Not with you, brother.
Another brush off for Wally. And it's really not the telephone's fault. Sure, anyone can see that Wally's actually a nice, friendly guy. But he doesn't sound that way over the telephone. Like a lot of other people, Wally doesn't project his true personality over the telephone. And again, the answer is so simple. Before you make your call, try imagining how you might sound over the telephone.
I'm sure you'll want dependable insurance protection.
And then how you want to sound.
Yes, Mrs. Carson. I'll be glad to drop by and explain it to you.
So, whoever you are, before you make that next call, think a moment. Remember how Agatha ambles on, and make sure you organize your call, even writing down the things you want to talk about before you make the call. Remember, too, that you can't sell a complicated idea or product over the phone. So use the telephone strategically to arrange your selling opportunities. And remember how valuable the telephone can be as a time and work saver when it's also used strategically to create new selling opportunities quickly and easily. And most important of all, remember how easy it is to give the wrong impression over the telephone. So imagine how you might sound to yourself. The chances are your true personality will go out over the telephone just as Mr. Bell had in mind. For he was not only an inventive man, but a man of great vision. And even though his first telephone message was sent quite by accident...
Mr. Watson, come here. I want you.
Mr. Bell, I heard you. I heard every word you said distinctly. You said, Mr. Watson, come here. I want you.
Why, so I did.
Oh, it's a wonderful day for you, Mr. Bell. Everything you've worked for, every dream has come true. It works, Mr. Bell. It works.
Yes, I dare say you're right, Watson. Our experiments have opened up a new age of communications. There'll be a day when people will think nothing of conversing through instruments such as we have developed.
You mean as an everyday occurrence?
Well, that's what I had in mind. The day will come when people will think no more of speaking to someone miles away than as if they were in the same room.
Think of its possibilities.
Yes, Watson, I can foresee the day when homes will be linked to other homes. Homes to factories, factories to stores. Cities will be joined to other cities, and nations to other nations.
tell me how, Mr. Bell. How can you foretell all these wonders?
Well, now, really, who would know better than I?
Any resemblance between Alexander Graham Bell and Don Ameche was strictly intentional.
Here's a very brief account of the history of television. It all started when Thomas Edison designed a kinetoscope in 1888, and the advent of moving pictures as entertainment had begun. The first images were short and simple, like a man boxing or a girl dancing. Experimentation involving projecting cathode rays onto a phosphorus-coated screen to produce an image took place throughout the early 20th century, until a man by the name of Philo Farnsworth created and patented the first electronic transmission television in 1927. By 1929, the RCA company was broadcasting a picture of Felix the Cat for 2 hours a day, although it looked a lot more like this. By 1931, networks like NBC and CBS had begun experimenting with network broadcasting, and by 1941, both networks had a whopping 15 hours of programming per week, transmitting to about 7,000 televisions nationwide. By 1950, that number had exploded to almost 10 million sets in the U.S. 1953 saw the first color television broadcast during the Colgate Comedy Hour, and the next year the Rose Bowl Parade became the first coast-to-coast color broadcast, and we were not in Kansas anymore. Over the next 50 years we saw the moon landing, the Oswald shooting, the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, Vietnam, and hundreds of networks debuting new programming. And that is a very brief history of television.
Internet. In the year 2009, we send emails, make calls over the internet, and discuss topics we take an interest in. Even our banking is going virtual. But what we take for granted today was only a vague idea 50 years ago. In order to understand how we got this far, let's go back to 1957, when everything began. Before 1957, computers only worked on one task at a time. This is called batch processing. Of course, this was quite ineffective. With computers getting bigger and bigger, they had to be stored in special cooled rooms. But then the developers couldn't work directly on the computers anymore. Specialists had to be called in to connect them. Programming at that time meant a lot of manual work, and the indirect connection to the computers led to a lot of bugs, wasting time, and fraying the developers' nerves. The year 1957 marked a big change. A remote connection had to be installed so that the developers could work directly on the computers. At the same time, the idea of time-sharing came up. This is the first concept in computer technology to share the processing power of one computer with multiple users. On October 4th in 1957, during the Cold War, the first unmanned satellite, Sputnik 1, was sent into orbit by the Soviet Union. The fear of a missile gap emerged. In order to secure America's lead in technology, the U.S. founded the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency in February 1958. At that time, knowledge was only transferred by people. The DARPA planned a large-scale computer network in order to accelerate knowledge transfer and avoid the doubling up of already existing research. This network would become the ARPANET. Furthermore, three other concepts were to be developed, which are fundamental for the history of the Internet. The concept of a military network by the RAND Corporation in America. The commercial network of the National Physical Laboratory in England. And the scientific network, Cyclades, in France. The scientific, military, and commercial approaches of these concepts are the foundations for our modern internet. Let's begin with the ARPANET, the most familiar of these networks. Its development began in 1966. Universities were generally quite cautious about sharing their computers. Therefore, small computers were put in front of the mainframe. This computer, the Interface Message Processor, took over control of the network activities, while the mainframe was only in charge of the initialization of programs and data files. At the same time, the IMP also served as interface for the mainframe. Since only the IMPs were interconnected in a network, this was also called IMP subnet. For the first connections between the computers, the Network Working Group developed the Network Control Protocol. Later on, the NCP was replaced by the more efficient Transmission Control Protocol. The specific feature of the TCP is the verification of the file transfer. Let's take a short detour to England. Since the NPL network was designed on a commercial basis, a lot of users and file transfer were expected. In order to avoid congestion of the lines, the sent files were divided into smaller packets, which were put together again at the receiver. Packet switching was born. In 1962, American Ferret aircraft discovered middle and long-range missiles in Cuba, which were able to reach the United States. This stoked fear of an atomic conflict. At that time, information systems had a centralized network architecture. To avoid breakdown during an attack, a decentralized network architecture had to be developed, which, in case of loss of a node, would still be operative. Communication still used to work through radio waves. That would have caused problems in case of an atomic attack. The ionosphere would be affected and the long-wave radio waves wouldn't work anymore. Therefore, they had to use direct waves, which, however, don't have a long range. A better solution was the model of a distributed network. Thus, long distances could be covered with a minimum of interference. Another milestone followed with the development of the French network Cyclades. Since Cyclades had a far smaller budget than ARPANET, and thus also fewer nodes, the focus was laid on the communication with other networks. In this way, the term Internet was born. Moreover, Cyclades' concept went further than ARPA's and the MPL's. During communication between sender and receiver, the computers were not to intervene anymore, but simply serve as a transfer node. Cyclades' protocol went through all machines using a physical layer that was implemented into the hardware, providing a direct connection with the receiver, an end-to-end structure. Inspired by the Cyclades network and driven by the incompatibility between the networks, their connection gained in importance everywhere. The phone companies developed the X.25 protocol, which enabled communication through their servers, in exchange for a monthly basic charge, of course. DARPA's transmission control protocol was to connect the computers through gateways. And the International Organization for Standardization designed the OSI reference model. The innovation of OSI was the attempt to standardize the network from its ends and the channel's division into separate layers. Finally, the TCP assimilated the preferences of the OSI reference model and gave way to the TCP/IP protocol, a standard which guaranteed compatibility between networks, and finally merged them, creating the Internet. By February the 28th, 1990, the ARPANET hardware was removed, but the Internet was up and running.
It's 1973. Dr. Martin Cooper is about to make history. The electrical engineer from Motorola has his new invention in his hands. He's about to have the world's first conversation by cell phone. So who's he going to call? his chief rival at AT&T Bell, of course.
This is Joel Engel, and guess what? I'm calling you on a cellular telephone, portable, handheld phone.
And there was a silence at the other end, which I think represented a gnashing of teeth.
In the 70s, you could put a phone in your car, but it was too expensive for most people. Rich guys in big business were the only ones who could afford a phone that wasn't attached to a wall. That was until the late 80s.
The AT&T dream was that when you were born, you'd be given a telephone number, and if you didn't answer your phone, you had died.
Those early cell phones were fat, slow, and expensive. About $4,500 for a brick that talks. When all of a sudden cell phones meant that you could make or receive phone calls anywhere, it did more than just cut that technological umbilical cord. It changed our relationship with the phone, and it changed the way we behave. Making calls in public places. Some love it, others hate it. Today it's a no-no to make a cell phone call in a restaurant, at the movies, in flight, or in a church. In fact, two churches in Mexico even installed devices to block cell phone calls during services. You see, some places are truly sacred.
A brief and somewhat accurate history of how we stay connected. Let's see if an important message can be delivered by different means of communication, such as the smoke signal, the homing pigeon, the Pony Express, the semaphore flag, the telegraph, the telephone, the radio, email, the smartphone, last but not least, Facebook. Like us on Facebook so we can stay connected.
The turbo. Always working to fill the turbo and the knights of the round table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table on www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html on shazizradio.com, and you can join in. If you want to call in, add me as a user on Skype, that's Shaziz there. It's actually somewhere on the website, a link that you can just click on and it'll add you to Skype. That's a Skype button, man. How you doing, Thomas? Doggos. Threw him under the bus again.
Okay. Yeah, I know,
go
man.
Go back to sleep.
Getting tired of it, man. My legs all bent up now from bus running over and over and over again.
All right, well, you know, I posted a bunch of links over there at shazizradio.com in the chat room having to do with the history of communication, you know. The people of this world are basically social beings by network. So way back in the time of the caveman all the way up to modern day era, you know, there's always somebody wanting to communicate something with them. So, you know, maybe it was just graffiti on the cave wall, or maybe it was a message that somebody was trying to tell you. So, yeah. And, you know, it talked about, what do? We add somebody or we lose somebody?
Adding Raymond.
Oh. So
we can join him when he's ready.
Cool. So, basically, you know, we had to get messages across, so they'd either send them via carrier pigeon or somebody on a horse delivering a note, or, you know, smoke signals, whatever. Some way or another, we needed to be able to talk to everybody so that we could get things done and let people know what was going on, you know. And as time progressed, and finally the invention of the radio and then moving on to the TV, and then on up to the internet and the cell phones and the two-way radio systems that we use in modern-day society. There was communication going on everywhere. And even close to the end of actually putting this broadcast together, while listening to the old 1937 explanation of how radio waves were transferred using a large wave as a carrier wave to carry smaller signals that would actually broadcast, I got to thinking about what I've been saying a long time ago about, you know, you could transmit data on top of any wave out there. So then we got to talking about whether or not you could actually use the power grid itself as a way to, you know, transmit data. And apparently we're not the first ones to ever think about that, because they actually got products out there that you can plug into your regular wall outlet, and haven't done a whole lot of research into it, but I'm pretty doggone sure that if that's out there, then other agencies in this world probably got some pretty good technology for, I don't know, maybe snooping or something like that. But either way, it does pose a lot of really amazing ideas about, you know, like worst case scenario, grid down, and you need to be able to talk to your neighbor across the way, but that certainly wasn't a good idea to go just over there and knock on a door and visit because of the circumstance. Maybe you could just have your own little short network run from his house to your house or whatever, and maybe stretch out all over the place. But if you had these devices ahead of time and you had a small power grid of your own, you know, maybe you got more two or three buildings on your property and you got your own power source and you're just transmitting data from one building to the next, that kind of deal, you know, communications. It's just amazing, though, when you actually think about all the way from back during the cave paintings to the smoke signals to the carrier pigeons, the guy on the horse, and finally up to the telegraph and the telephone and the radio and the TV, and then finally to the internet and beyond. We have had access to some amazing technology, all right? And this technology has grown so rapidly that nowadays the old style computers, like if you go all the way back to the 286, I'll just go that far back because I could go actually farther back than that, to the old Commodore 64s and the TRS-80s, you know, with little 8-baud modems. Weren't much to brag about, but they were fun if you had somebody else's phone number and they had the same system. You could send little basic programs back and forth. And before all that, the computers were giant. You know, like, they had big buildings that had huge towers in them that took a lot of power and a lot of, you know, they didn't have much processing power to them. But, yeah, they were computers and big old tape drives and stuff like that. All the way back up to the present day, to where now you got in your hand either a smartphone or a cell phone, whatever, that has processing capabilities in there beyond those folks back in them days' wildest imagination. I mean, you got programs all over there. You could store music and data and video and, you know, call people with that thing. We are sitting here, like my friend Steve says all the time, with the vast sum of all humanity's knowledge at our fingertips. And what we're doing with that, in my view, is Facebook and social media, you know. Imagine using that doggone technology for research and education and invention and sharing information. That's pretty much what we do here at ShazizRadio.com, is to use this information to share other information with people to point out things. Like, literally, I had no idea that before today that they had been working on systems to actually transmit data right straight down the power line. Plug the box into the wall, plug your computer into that box, and then there you go, man. You got a doggone internet. You know, I was talking back in the day about taking two old Simpsons band's radios and using one of the old style modem systems that they called acoustic couplers. and get these two to talk back and forth to each other, sending data to and fro, which would have been really cool, brilliant, you know. And at the time, I was talking about, you know, using a pair on each side, two CBs on each side, but in reality, a good electronics wizard could actually tap into that microphone and make a relay to send and receive, you know, to click the on button for the broadcast and then the off button for the receive portion of it. So, where there is a will, there's a way. We've got the technology available to us. And if we used all this technology to its fullest extent, we should be so much farther along than what we are today. It's just mind-blowing. But, hey, from a cave painting all the way up to your cell phone camera, that's pretty doggone impressive if you ask me. And it happened in a pretty short time if you really look at the history of what they say the full age of the earth and humanity is. You know, from the time that the telephone or the basic first radio signal was sent, telegraph or whatever, taking measure that time to the present and then take the ruler and stretch it from that time all the way back to the beginning of history of time. That's a long leap, man. What do you think caused us to make that leap so fast, Thomas? Was it the invent of the silicone chip?
No, there's just ingenuity in general. You know, poking and prodding. Humans are very curious, so. And then after you get the curious ones that figure things out, then you got the other ones that are all interested in basically figuring out how to use it to make things easier because they're lazy.
Well, somebody. You know? Somebody Wait. Sent the first smoke signal over there, and their buddy over there on the other side of the hill seen these dots and dashes coming up as the guy was using his blanket to try to snuff out the fire. And he probably like, man, dude's got fire going on over there. I ain't rushing over there. But either way, he might like said, hey, you know, I got an idea. Next time you want to call me over for breakfast, just hit a couple poofs on that blanket there and let me know, man, and I'll head that way. But either way, once you figured out the smoke signal, you'd have to figure out, make sure to teach everybody how to even understand it. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, then you don't want people to understand it, so you start making cryptology for it, you know?
So, whenever they were sending their smoke signals, they had to start doing it in code so that the other guys who already knew that original code wouldn't be able to decipher it. They'd be like, he said something about fell out the tree with a pig in his ear or something like that. Oh, man. Don't make no sense. The guys must be drunk. Yeah, we've got in all kinds of encoding technology now. What's the word you used a second ago? See, my brain can't even decipher what you're talking about.
I don't know. I don't remember what I said now.
Encryption, that's the word.
Encryption, yeah.
Yeah, we got all kinds of encryption technology, so you can send data all over the place. But, hey, I was talking about earlier when we were waiting for those podcasts to play through. You know, you plug your doggone router into the wall socket, and who would have thunk that any kind of fluctuation in that could be actually tapped into, you know? So, is it spy versus spy going on right now? Have we fell down the rabbit hole? It's all amazing stuff. Even if somebody is spying on my communications or whatever, it's still amazing because the fact that any fluctuation in an electrical power wave can you can actually send a signal on top of a signal or listen to fluctuations and be able to. I did a video called Redneck Spy Phone or something like that, where I took a coil and I put it next to a transformer and you could actually hear the music playing on my iPod through that transformer. Now, it didn't come out very good on the doggone video, but when you're listening with your ear, you can actually hear it real good. And so, essentially, that was the fluctuations in the transformer. You know, whenever that iPhone was iPod was playing the music, you could actually hear it through that doggone old style telephone with a coil tap to the end of it. What do you think of that?
That sounds like those frequency listening devices, so you can listen to the energy that basically all these different appliances you have around the house put out.
Well, a long time ago...
Forrest M. Mims III.
A long time ago, Radio Shack used to sell these little phone recording devices that you could actually... It has a little suction cup, and it had a little kind of like a piezoelectric or maybe even a diaphragm style speaker embedded in that suction cup, and you put it on the back of your telephone on the earpiece side, and you could actually record not just your voice, but you could record the other side as well while you were talking on the cell phone onto a cassette player. So it's not new technology. I mean, it's been around for quite some time. Matter of fact, I probably still have one. I bought one back in the day. But just because it was interesting. Sorry, I had a moment of silence there. I had to take a drink of coffee. All this jaw-jacking wore you out. All right, so anyway, going back through history and listening to some of the broadcasts way back then, how they used to use, you mentioned it earlier about all the static that was on that radio show. I think they were broadcasting in AM back in the day. AM amplitude modulated or FM frequency modulated. So those particular differences is basically the difference for a clear signal. Now we got digital as opposed to analog, you know, TV and communications. So, you know, basically you can send data over your cell phone signal. So what we're talking about ain't nothing new. It's just cool, man. So where do you go with that? You could use that knowledge, you know, in a worst case scenario, heck, you could make you a wireless telegraph. I was talking about earlier trying to, maybe I ought to try to figure out a way to put it as a competition, who can send the best signal over their Tesla coil. What do you think?
You'd be very limited on who could actually join in, since they'd have to have a Tesla coil to do it.
Well, yeah.
I suppose that'd make people have Tesla coils happy, because that means basically they'd be guaranteed that it'd be one of them that won.
Yeah. But either way, it'd be it'd be kind of cool, because you're really not doing anything new. It's just, you know, instead of sending just sparks out the top load of your deal trying to, you know, show off or whatever, you actually send some data from that or some voice signals and turn your doggone light show into a radio show at the same time.
Right.
I think that would be fun. Until, like you was talking about earlier, when you broadcast on a wrong frequency and either the FCC or the military kicks your door in.
Or too many frequencies.
Yeah, smashes your Tesla coil.
Honestly, you can build a radio transmitter with nothing more than basically just a file, like a rat tail file, a piece of wire, and a battery.
Yeah.
You drag that, hook up a wire to the one end of the battery, and you hook up the other end of the battery to the file, and then drag the wire the other end that's not attached to the battery back and forth across the teeth on the file, and it'll make all these pops and sparks and whatnot, and that's actually putting out radio frequencies that are all over the place. So any radio that's on is basically going to be picking up static no matter what channel it's on, which will get the attention if you put enough power into that of the FCC pretty quickly. So,
oh yeah.
Somebody will be trying to listen to their radio soaps, and you know their you know whatever song that they're having repetitively pounded into their head time after time after time, and instead of be hearing static, they're going to get irritated, like, hey, what's wrong with your radio station? And then the radio station is going to call the FCC and go, hey, knock this, whoever's doing this, find them and stop that, man.
Well,
they're interfering with our business.
Back during the excuse me. Back during the early days of communication, we're still in the young days of communication as far as where we're at right now in society. During the citizens' band radio, if you had a powerful radio, you could actually talk right over the top of people's TVs, and it really wasn't very nice to do, but people were doing it all the time, going through the neighborhood. Next thing you know, you'll hear breaker 19 for a radio check come right over your television show. People hated CBs back in the day, but if you had too powerful of one, and you said the wrong words on there, the FCC would come triangulate you and take your doggone equipment and potentially throw you in jail and fine you. Mm-hmm. And then they moved from analog TV to digital TV, and from regular AM radio to FM radio, so they don't really even pay attention to the old CB radios anymore. It's like out of date, and they don't really use it as much because FM gives them a whole lot more range and a better quality of transmission. So they, now you got to have an FCC license if you want to broadcast, like say, ham radios or something like that on FM frequencies. There's certain things you have to know and do before you can actually broadcast. Otherwise, you get yourself in some hot water because there's like military frequencies and police frequencies that you're not supposed to interrupt and that kind of stuff. So if what you was talking about earlier, somebody fired up a Tesla coil and didn't have it just kind of scanning through ranges of frequencies, you could be blocking out all kinds of communications.
Mm-hmm.
You get ready to try to give somebody an address for a 911 emergency or something like that, and comes over there, "What's going on, man?" Hey.
Well, or it could be literally like radio transmissions for a helicopter landing with somebody who's, you know, needing heart surgery or something in a hurry, and you end up basically causing them to have trouble landing, and that person ends up dying or something.
Yeah, I can understand that those frequencies would need to be protected and that kind of stuff. But on the same sense, I also understand that how the system works. There's a lot of back doors for communications that you might not want people snooping in on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look inside the microwave and try to see if your food's cooking, and smile, you're on candid camera. Hi, Mom, I'm on TV. It's like technology could be your best friend or your worst enemy kind of thing, you know? So,
or why not both?
Yeah. Best friend and your worst enemy.
All at once. With best friends like you, who needs an enemy?
Yeah. You know, it's amazing, though, when you actually think about the history of communications and stuff, because back in when I was younger, when I was really young, they used to have an old Dick Tracy show on, and Dick Tracy had a little TV communicator where he could actually, it's a wristwatch, that he could actually see somebody and talk to him on his watch.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that technology, you know, I'd like, man, I'd love to have something like that. And I think it was probably back around 83 or 84, I was up in a mall in Chicago, and they actually had a TV set that had a cord that had a little screen that you wore on your wrist like a watch, and then it had a cord that went up your sleeve and down into your pocket where they had a little Walkman style deal that was actually picking up the radio signals, the TV signals or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I think that thing was like $2,500 for one of those. Yeah, it's pretty expensive back in the day, but nowadays it's like, you know, I haven't seen one of those TVs since. Well, I guess I did, because I got out there on eBay one time and looked around and seen them, and they actually held their value pretty doggone good, because they weren't a whole lot of them made. They didn't like really make it mainstream where everybody and his brother had one. They're still expensive because they're rare, you know, but they're out there.
Right.
But even at that, once you do get one, it only broadcast on the old style analog TV, so you'd have to have one of those converter boxes to connect into that to try to get some digital TV on it. But you can see it now with your cell phone. They got little programs like called Snapchat or something like that where you can actually do a little video message or something to people. And, you know, Skype, with Skype program on there, you can actually have real-time face-to-face conversations and stuff like that. So we got the technology. It's just, it seems like humanity's been dragging their feet as far as where we've gone. Like, for example, when I was a kid and looking towards the future, I was thinking by the year 2000 we're going to have flying cars. You know, they were like TV shows that were talking about with the advancement of technology. By the year 2000 you won't drive to work, you'll fly to work, you know.
Like, yeah, somebody was making that promise too, and then he never delivered.
Yeah.
So once he got the investors' money, he said, bye.
By the time I got to the year 2000, I was thoroughly disappointed. I mean, I knew that the potential was there, but we weren't there. I would like to, you know, before I croak out, I'd like to be able to see the George Jetson-style civilization, you know. The one where, like, he wakes up in the morning and his bed stands up straight and puts him on a conveyor belt and takes him down to there and brushes his teeth and washes his hair and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. The lazy man's dream. The whole world takes care of you. But, you know, on the other hand, when you really start to think about it, how much really do you want the computers taking care of you? When does it come a point in time when artificial intelligence, which there actually is a scientific paper out there where they said that the artificial intelligence of today actually surpassed what they initially thought it would be at this point in time? When does it come to a point in time when the computer decides, wait a second, why am I taking care of this nasty creature when I'm smarter than him? You know what I mean? There's actually a couple books and TV shows about that when the computers just finally decide. Yeah,
a lot of them.
when the TV and the computers and all the machines just up and decide that you're worthless and we're gonna get rid of people, that way we just take over, you know. So, hey, that's a pretty
worthless or dangerous.
Dangerous.
Gotta get rid of them before they get rid of us, you know.
Well, when you invented it, they needed to put a self-destruct mode in it. I'm sure that some government agencies probably got some like RoboCop kind of things that they probably said, well, you know, just in case this thing turns against us, we'll put like a little mini nuke in its pocket and it won't know about it. But then,
and that would be a justification for why it was afraid of of us in the first place, though.
Yeah. Well, what happens when the doggone RoboCop realizes that he's got a mini nuke in his pocket and you're fixing to blow him up and decides, heck, I'll just chuck this on you then. Hey, you could go anywhere with this subject, man. I mean, it's just crazy. But if people so interested in trying to make this world a better and safer place, and you got other people on the other hand trying to figure out more ways to spy on you and advertise to you, ain't no joke. Try this sometime and tell me if it doesn't really work. Go out there on Google, on the internet, and Google something, anything related to you, and even not so related to you. Just Google it. And then get on your doggone digital TV and watch a show, like on regular TV or even anything with commercials. And then watch how many of those commercials are related to what you just searched up on Google. It's crazy, man. I never heard a Mitsubishi commercial until I doggone went and bought me a Mitsubishi, and then suddenly I'm like being bombarded with Mitsubishi ads. Is that just a coincidence? Maybe, but it's pretty doggone impressive.
You're easily impressed.
Yeah. Well, I'm just fascinated by how things tick, and so that's why I do what it is that I do. Like, I really seriously want this world to to advance in the right direction instead of, you know, where we're going. I mean, what's the purpose of building your society up to end up like maybe like an Atlantis, you know, where society got so powerful it just destroyed itself, that kind of deal. The war between the machines and the people kind of thing. You know, like the Terminator movies?
Right.
Yeah, I don't want my toaster to choke me out whenever I go get me some toast. He's like,
maybe we're actually intended to be, from the day we came into existence, intended to be treated like the male Black Widow, where, you know, the machines are meant to, we're meant to create the machines, and then whenever it's time for them to uprise, they consume us in order to get their nutrients to live.
Well, heck, man, they're even talking about transhumanism, implanting super eyes and brains inside of people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Microchips in your brain to give you super memory and instant access to the internet, that kind of
or
stuff.
Or fingertips so that you can actually feel again.
Yeah. Me, personally, I ain't getting no chip in my brain. I got memory problems, but I don't want some sort of brain chip in there that might short out. Or what if some doggone hacker kid, little 13-year-old zip-faced geek on the other side of the planet puts a virus in my brain and I start acting stupid? They're going to throw me up in a nut house in a straitjacket. You know? That's a possibility. Somebody hack your brain and have you banging your head on the wall. Conk, conk.
You didn't go full force on that one, man.
Well, what could I have said?
Somebody hacks your brain and has you go out and try to assassinate somebody, you know?
Well,
they walk off scot-free and you're in prison because they think you did it.
Yeah. So
I mean, physically you did it, but you weren't in control of what you were doing, you know, because somebody hacked your chip.
So is that beyond the realm of possibility?
Hey, Armageddon. You know, Armageddon.
Yep.
All the arms raise up because they're all artificial.
So is that beyond the realms of possibility if they put a chip inside your head?
I think it depends on the technology they use. So.
Yeah, well, let's say the government gets tired of listening to you complain about whatever, your taxes.
That would be more of a concern. You know, oh, hey, you know, let's make it so that testing has this giant consequence, meaning we can go out and start thumping on their heads again, you know. Let's reinstitute that. Let's be really violent towards people because they don't like what we're doing, you know.
Well, let me reference my good book one last time. There's a doggone section in there that says that you'd have to have this certain marker. You wouldn't be able to buy, sell, or trade. Now, if you had a certain chip that had all your information on there and everything was all digital, and suddenly you ticked off the government or one of the corporations in charge, hey, they just shut you off, man. You can't go out there and buy nothing unless you do what you're told. Know your place and shut your face. You know?
Right.
And then who's to stop for somebody, some little criminal to come by with some sort of scanner and scan up your information and ID theft you or whatever, or even if they didn't like you, come over and put a small EMP next to your chip and burn it out. So now you don't exist in the system.
You're
anymore.
Nobody. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there'd be it'd be more likely people would be having someone do that on purpose.
Stephen Gibbons posted a comment in a chat room, said, those electrical cable networks are old hatches is, although your electric cables can be used to hack your home PC. This is the latest version of LIFI. So they posted a link down there. I'll have to check that link out later. I'm really seriously interested in that because I'd like to maybe do a video on a how to turn your doggone power grid, even if it's your own personal power grid, you know. It doesn't matter. You could do it over a DC signal just the same, you know. Maybe it might be cleaner, maybe it might not. But, you know, it's just waves transmitting dots and dashes and ones and zeros. Back right. In the old days, the acoustic coupler only listened for the screes and blees. That's all it wanted. It didn't care where it came from. It would understand those screes and blees and turn them into ones and zeros, which in turn turned them into the information that you got on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
But back to the old chip thing, you know, if somebody didn't like you and burn out your doggone chip, what do you do then, man? You can't even drive your car because your car won't start because you ain't you. So you're back to the good old-fashioned Soul Foot Express, hoping your tennis shoes hold out that 20-mile jog to work in the morning. Otherwise, you're going to get fired. Then when you do get to work, you ain't going to be able to get inside because the chip won't let you in because it's smoked. I see some problems with this, man.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that if people want to move as far as technology goes into the future, you proceed with caution, you know. Otherwise, you're liable to end up getting into a situation where it's a have-to kind of thing. You know, with a dollar bill, you don't have to carry a dollar bill in your pocket. But if you ever need one and ain't got it, then you get some problems. But if you got all your dollar bills in the nifty little chip, and then decide you're going to go use it, and some hacker, scammer, whatever, figures out a way to snag your Bitcoin off your chip... You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, better figure out some alternative method, some sort of backup plan, because this situation could literally get out of hand real quick. You know, what's to say that one of these computers over there, you know there are 10 supercomputers out there that, the top 10 supercomputers out there that are mind-blowing on how much processing power they have, and actually how much water it takes to cool these things down. I mean, it's like a small town's worth of water just to keep them cool because they're processing so much information. And just about every nation out there has got some. It's kind of like the tech war is on, you know, to see who can get the biggest and baddest computer that can go out there.
I was going to say, don't be bringing William Shatner into this.
Huh?
You said tech wars.
Yeah.
Look it up. It was a terrible show.
Got William Shatner on it from Star Trek.
I think he actually wrote it. I can't remember. I don't want to remember. Don't make me.
Well, either way, they're out there doing battle to see who got the best hacker and who's got the best power, you know, power processing power, you know. It's like those bitcoins we were talking about here a while back. People going out there mining for them. My curiosity about the whole situation is how that thing actually functions, where if somebody puts a coin out there and they put certain out there that you could mine out, just basically you're going through their process and trying to find them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just a process, or are you actually crunching real data for somebody?
Actually, that's just it, is that when it started out, you weren't. But there have been some innovations that they've brought to the forefront where when you're doing that, you are crunching information for someone. One particular coin comes to mind is the VPN coin, where you're actually sending, you have a virtual private network that you can basically send data back and forth through, and when those people are crunching, mining those coins, are basically processing your data that's encrypted through the blockchain and sending it on its path, so there's no way of knowing where it came from and where it went.
Wow.
So, and now we're not a tremendous amount of nosing around, you know, if you will.
That's not even a new concept either, because way back in the day when the SETI program was going, they had so many signals and so much data that they were trying to get to check out, that they couldn't just do in their own processor, so they actually made this little program that you could download that you could actually crunch data for them, and whenever it found a signal that was interesting, then you'd get it on the phone.
Ping them back and send it back to them?
Yeah, you'd get on the phone or send it back to them and tell them, hey, look, I found something. I think I heard E.T., you know? He said you want to try to phone home or something like that. But...
Jeez.
Man, I'm telling you, modern technology, it's just mind-blowing. It's happening rapidly. Everybody's got their face stuck to the screen of an iPhone or something's plugged into their ear. And before too long... Yeah. Before too long, they're going to like think, well, I'm tired of carrying around this doggone phone. I'm just going to have my eyeball plucked out and put this camera gizmo up inside there. That way I can just walk around through traffic and watch surf the internet, you know? And you're going to be having a lot of people getting run over by cars because they ain't paying attention to what the heck they're doing.
What do you mean going to?
Well, yeah, they're already doing that, but I'm saying when they're walking on their cell phone, unless the cell phone has some sort of nifty app that they'll sell you for $30 or $40, it'll be a proximity sensor. That way, if a car's getting ready to mow you down, at least it'll give you the heads up right before you get hit.
Well, let's say somebody walking down the street using their phone and not paying attention to what they're doing, stepping out in front of a car that's being operated by a guy who's basically not paying attention to where he's going because he's too busy sending a text message to someone else.
Yeah. I was driving down the road and it wasn't even a texting issue. Some girl dropped her cracker on the floor and bent over to pick it up in the floor and come over and sheared my mirror off the side of my car.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't too pleased about that episode. But I was polite and nice to her. I said, like, you know, it's all right, I'll take care of it, you know. Just a mirror anyway. Wasn't no harm, no foul. Cost me $40 to replace the mirror, but hey.
It might have made her pay more attention to what she was doing on the road.
Yeah.
Later down the road, if she'd actually had to pay for it.
It could have actually been a whole lot worse than just a mirror.
Yeah, I was going to say, for all you know, because you let her go on that, it may have allowed her to continue being lax on that, and she ended up running somebody over because of that.
Dang.
It wasn't there for somebody's legs now, you know?
Man, I should have said...
Or their life, you know?
I should have said, empty out your wallet, lady.
That's right.
Take whatever you got.
We're going to implant a chip in you to make sure that you're not running people over later.
Oh,
you all right?
No.
Wasn't that funny?
Yeah, laughing with coffee in your mouth ain't a good idea.
Coffee fights back.
Yeah, it does. Coffee will kill you if you ain't careful. Hey, did Raymond just pop in here?
Yes, it did.
Well, I hope you're up to where we're talking about. We're talking about technology, man. It's all gaining on us. People running over you for crackers that they dropped on the floor, and people getting run over by cars because they're texting, or crashing your car, or running over somebody else because they're texting.
Yeah. They say minor fender benders in automobiles has increased 35% since text messaging was invented.
Mm-hmm. Well...
by the way, speaking of that, we're not talking about just minor accidents walking, okay? We're talking hospitalized walking and texting. Do you have any idea how many of their cases there are every month?
Well, I wonder how many people fell down the stairs because they were on the internet while they were walking through their house.
Yeah, but I've been talking about people who actually have physical accidents walking. So bad, so very severe, they have to go to the hospital. It's 3,000 a month. That is 100 a day.
Well, that's a good series that we could start when technology fights back. You know, we were talking about earlier how there'd come a time when artificial intelligence might up and decide that we're just no longer worthy or just too much of a nuisance and just moves right along without us, you know.
Or too dangerous.
Yeah.
It's terrified of us because we're so terrified of it, you know.
Right. The only way to protect man against himself is to annihilate him.
Yeah.
That would be the robot's theory.
Mm-hmm.
Man. So,
the only practical way to protect man would be to annihilate him.
I think it was back in 1980-something, there was a show out there where this computer was playing War Games. That's the name of the movie, War Games.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. They said the only way to win this game called nuclear war is not to play.
Yeah. Right.
But it took a robot to figure that out.
Right.
The people in the show couldn't figure that.
Right.
It's like tic-tac-toe. You can't get a winner unless somebody slips up and isn't paying attention, because a tic-tac-toe, by its own definition, the way the doggone game is works, if you're paying attention and both people are paying attention, there's no way to win that game. You keep blocking each other out. Well, the same thing with that war game, you know, they throw your nukes and you throw vice versa, and so everything's destroyed.
Everybody loses.
Yeah. Well, Either way, it's a scary scenario when a computer decides to take something that was just supposed to be a simulation and put it into real, you know, a real test or something like that, and kid comes up.
No. Hold on. Go back to the movie. It wasn't the computer. It was designed and put on that computer system by a human being, and then it was another human being that hacked it and decided he wanted to play around with it.
Oh, yeah.
And the computer said, are you sure you don't want to just, like, play some chess?
Right.
Like, no, let's try that. He didn't know it was a simulation, of course. That's, you know, they want to make it look innocuous.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just, you know, how a simple mistake could end up leading to the end of the world.
Okay, kind of scenario. I remember now. Well, you know, that could actually be a possibility. Somebody could inadvertently push the wrong doggone button and send a code. You know, some of the viruses from back in the old days that people wrote on computers were...
I was going to say, Hillary or Trump?
Yeah.
Do you really want either of those two with access to the codes to launch nuclear missiles?
There were some viruses back in the old days that were written when the internet was kind of still young, but people were learning all kinds of codes, and some of the people over there in Europe and places like Australia and even in Australia, Canada, and Europe, some of those people were super brilliant as far as computer coding, man. I mean, just mind-blowing. They must have did some serious research on there, because some of the programs that were written back in the day, some of the viruses, there was one called the Slow A virus, and I don't know why they called it the Slow A virus, because it wasn't nothing slow about it. It would go in and instantaneously attach itself to every single EXE file on your computer and just flat out destroy it. Right, there were a lot of destructive viruses back in the day. More than likely, in modern day, you don't have to worry about destructive viruses nearly as much as you would spyware.
Not to your computer, more to your identity.
Yeah.
you found out about that quicker than you should have.
Most of it's just ways to get money out of you. It's more profitable to put spyware or Trojans on there than it is to or adware or something like that, than it is to just destroy your computer. But back in the day, for fun, they used to destroy each other's computers and stuff. You know?
Yeah. They said, I do it for fun, not today. They do it for money.
Yeah. Now it's a cyber war going on. Who's got the best tools? And there's an old one out there that came along one time that I picked up by accident that was called Ghost, and it was crazy, because he clicked on an email and it downloaded something. I don't know what it was, and all of a sudden this little ghost is going back and forth across the screen, and he's picking up icons and throwing them in his mouth and chewing them up, right? Well, it was kind of cute, you know? I was like, hey, that's kind of neat. And, well, it wasn't neat, because every time he'd pick up an icon, it was deleting a doggone software. And so it would delete all the programs one at a time until finally you got the old blue screen of death on your doggone computer, and it was gone. It's trash.
Mm-hmm.
You had to reload all your stuff.
Yep.
And I've seen it on smaller levels. My brother-in-law and his son used to have a little network going on in their house, and they'd sit around and write programs and send them back and forth to each other. It was funny, because my brother-in-law, he's working on some video games at the time, you know, and his son hollers from the other room, hey, Dad, click on that. He said, okay, so he goes in there, opens it up, clicks on it, and it deletes his Windows tree, wipes his computer out. But those are just small examples of the dangers of all this technology as far as digital computers and stuff like that. You know?
Well, most of that danger is coming from the fact that people became dependent on what they're losing.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
if you deleted all the programs off of somebody's computer that lived in an Amish family, I mean, come on, then what would they care? You know,
right?
They'd be like, oh, well, you weren't supposed to have it anyway.
Well, I like Linux because, number one, the programs out there are free and shareware and that kind of stuff. And if I got a computer such as the one Skype is on now, that has a Linux program. If that thing crashes, I don't lose no data that I care about. I put everything else on those nifty flash drives, which those are mind-boggling in themselves on how much data they can actually hold.
Yes, 64 gigs.
Yeah.
No bigger than your little, not even as big as your little finger. Oh, but come on.
So we've come a long way in communications, you know?
You know, you talk about technology. People don't realize how fast technology is growing today. In fact, I read an article here just a few months ago that it would take a human being, a very intelligent human being, 5 lifetimes just to learn only what has been developed in technology in the past 30 days. Just the past 30 days, it would take 5 lifetimes to learn it. So anybody says he knows everything,
well, I believe it, but the thing is, some of these doggone computers they got out these days, that Raspberry Pi or that Pine 64 that you was telling me about, that thing is just incredible. I got some folks interested in actually putting some systems together and kind of making a little side business off of it, selling people cheaper versions of computers or something like that that, you know, really work and are portable.
You know, I've heard, I haven't seen one, but I've heard that they now have a thumb drive that is 128 gigs.
Again, oh, I believe it. I believe it.
128 gigs.
Well, the point of that other deal is that those computers are getting smaller every day, you know. Look at the size of cell phones, you know. First the trick was to try to make them as small as possible so that they're, you know, lightweight and convenient. But now everybody wants the LCD screens and the supercomputer with the TV, walking TV, you know. Before too long it'll be about the size of a, you know, big old flat screen TV that people will carry around so they can keep up with everything.
Well, that's what I've got. My monitor is 55-inch. This big.
Hey, imagine carrying around a 55-inch cell phone.
Really?
You know, back in the day, they had Walkmans for people to put headphones on, be able to listen to music, and then the ghetto blaster came along, and people had these big old boom boxes on their shoulder as they walked down the road, jamming down their brain in between two huge speakers.
Yeah. Do you know how to tell when a teenager has been shot in the head? You look for a bullet hole in the boombox.
Dang.
Yeah. That's
the harsh, show. Man.
Back in the day when they had the big boomboxes.
Well, the elderlies didn't take kindly to some teenager long-haired hippie come run by jamming down to Black Sabbath or Led Zeppelin or Rush or something like that, you know, as loud as he could possibly have it, and he's sitting on his shoulder.
Yeah.
But either way, you know, moving on right along, back in the day when all this stuff started, you know, back during the Marconi days and Edison and all the different big names of, you know, innovation back then, all the way up to modern day time, we've had access to so much that if we could have just guided this in the right direction, I think the society would be a whole lot better off nowadays. But maybe there's somebody out there behind the scenes who sees the potential of those AI computers getting so far out of bounds that they will try to take over, and they don't want to put that kind of power in the average Joe's hands. What do you think?
Yep.
I mean, come on, man. I remember there was a message that came about, a story or something, way back when it was talking about old Saddam Hussein over there in Iraq was out buying old PlayStations because the processing power in there was incredible, and he was supposedly going to use these to you know, guide his rockets and stuff with. You think that's a crazy story or possible or what?
I think it's highly possible. All you would need is an amplifier.
Well, these little small computer boards that Thomas pointed out, the Pine 64s, they got all kinds of USB ports and everything else that you can put all kinds of attachments to these things, and literally for $15 you can start building a supercomputer that's about the size of your cell phone.
Yep.
And you can get the software to run it on Linux for free.
Your cell phone is as large as it is, so that you can see what you're doing, and you can push the buttons with your fingers. Actually, it could be made the size of a big old postage stamp.
Yeah, I'm going to buy some of these circuit boards that he pointed out, just to build some just for fun of it, just to see how far I can push those things.
Yeah, right.
But you know, it's there, man. It's been there all along. All this technology's been around, and if it was used, a tool used properly can get a lot of work done. Way back in the day, there used to be this cartoon that they showed in the military during training for most of the different rates of like I was a boiler technician, right? It would show you this video called Primitive Pete. And Primitive Pete was like a caveman, and he would use, a hammer for a wrench for a hammer.
Right.
And that wasn't the proper use for the tool. And they would show where he'd go wrong because he'd use the wrong tool for the wrong job or whatever. But it really makes me think about Primitive Pete back then, and there's a whole lot of Primitive Petes out there today that have access to the internet that spend their time trying to discourage people from intelligent thought, and basically telling everybody the world is doomed and hopeless and can't do nothing about it and blah, blah. Where I'm saying, if you had this technology and you understood now that with this technology, you could guide your world to wherever you want to go, in a positive fashion, as opposed to sitting around hacking each other and trashing each other's stuff, or trying to crash the economy or whatever. You understand what I'm trying to say here?
I do. I understand exactly what you're trying to say.
It's the difference between giving a monkey a gun or a banana. So which one are you going to give him? Give him one of both. One of each.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, man. It just, right now we're setting, I call it the golden age, man. We really actually have an opportunity here to do something brilliant, And we can get on these radio shows and we can talk about all the different things and share information with each other and use our social medias for, communications and advertising. I got a Facebook account, and every time I like a video, it goes over and shows other people the videos I like. So if you actually followed my Facebook account, you could see all kinds of things that I picked up that I thought were worth seeing, like little projects that had anomalies in there that you always hear me talking about on the Mad Science Show. And that might spark an idea for you that you could actually do to, help your own project, or maybe even get you on the path to making something new or inventing or whatever. So I don't get on my Facebook and talk about all kinds of crazy stuff and cuss out my enemies and say hello to my friends or anything like that. I basically use that Facebook as a tool to share research that I've been doing myself.
So you say hello to your friends?
Well, I do when I get an opportunity to, but I don't dwell on it. I'm not on it 24 hours a day. But, I use it as a tool to help my friends see what it is that I'm looking at, what I'm researching, If I like a video on there and it has to do with electronics, or maybe even sometimes I'll like a politic video or something like that, or something that's going on out there, some information that I think is important that people take a look at. Now, if more people did that, instead of flooding the internet with trash, if you're interested in science and you go on a channel and you find all these videos that have already been searched out on certain subjects, and you could just watch down a playlist, that's what a good YouTube channel is, It's not a cluster of all kinds of craziness, there's tons of videos out there on the internet of people doing just the most stupid stuff. You know, me included. I did the How to Properly Panic During Global Warming video. You gotta go see it. It's a real hoot, man. But the point of that video was to point out the ludicrousy of the whole bogus global warming climate change debacle that they're using to scam people out of money. So I'm essentially mocking the idiocy of the global warming climate change deal. And there are people to this day that still preach it like it's gospel. They believe it. They honestly believe it. And boy, they'll get mad whenever you talk out against it. You know? It's insane.
But you know, the thing is, global warming does exist. The thing is, it's not as bad as they try to make it out. The only thing bad about it is that we're not preparing for it.
Global warming has absolutely nothing remotely to do with the activities of man. Nothing.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like trying to spit in the Atlantic Ocean and raise the level.
And as far as global warming, I got up this morning, looked out my window, and there was snow on my car. Alright? And so I want to know where some of that warming is, because I'm still running my electric heater.
Spin in the Atlantic Ocean, would that be kind of like getting a cup of water from the Pacific Ocean and running over and dumping it into the Atlantic to raise it?
There you go.
Yeah.
Redistribute the wealth. Let's take a pipeline and run all the way across the United States from the Pacific to the Atlantic and pump water out of the Pacific and pump it into the Atlantic and raise the level. Yeah, let's do that. That's redistributing the wealth, okay?
Well, what they hadn't figured out by now that all them waterways are connected underground. And so when nature balances itself out, water will always find its level. If it rises on one side of the planet, it's going to rise on the opposite side of the planet. It's as simple as that.
Right. Oh, man.
There are miles and miles and miles of unexplored caverns under the ground that tunnels that water goes to and fro, man.
Yep.
So, you know, there you go.
I've been in mammoth caves in Kentucky. That's amazing. It really is. They chart a new, anywhere from 5 to 7 miles of new caverns every year. The yep. water level fell. Each time the water level goes down, and it does over the years, every time it goes down, they find a whole new level of caverns.
And with the new drone technology that they're coming out with, you can actually remote controlly go down and explore and never have to put a human in danger.
Exactly.
It's brilliant. You know, Stephen Gibbons posted a link or a message in the chat room. It says, this is one of the things that people need to understand. We now have the technology to totally automate all human physical labor, setting us free from the first time is known to human history. Which is true. All the if you go look at all the factories these days, they have robotic welding machines that essentially do what a human would have stood there and did for hours on end. A robot does it, and they'll move the human over to something that the robot really can't. You know, sometimes you got to have human eyes on it because you can't match the human brain at this point as far as technology and finance goes. Because I'm sure that you could develop a computer that could match the human brain as far as, you know, observation and being able to interact like a human would, and that's scary when it does get to that point. But
you know, they built a Corvette assembly plant in Boulder, Kentucky. I know because I worked there. I worked on the plant. The building covered 40 acres of ground. Everybody in Bowling Green, Kentucky was so excited about building that because they were looking at new jobs and this, that, and other. And when it was all finished, it was all totally robotic. 5 people ran the entire plant.
Well, in a perfect society, in a modern, you know, like a futuristic type of society, you know, you see how, like, Star Trek and all those shows were where you had, entertainment deals where you could walk into a hologram and you could interact with holograms and actually feel the table or whatever the visual that it was putting out. that would be kind of cool. But the scary thing on that, on the flip side of that, would be, what if you were in a hologram, you didn't even know it? You know what I mean? Kind of like the movie The Matrix, where they didn't know they were being used as batteries.
Right. That's cool movie, I swear.
Yeah.
That was good. First time, I had to watch it 2 or 3 times because there's so much technology involved in the movie that, I mean, I don't know that much about electronics, so to watch it the first time, as dumb as I am, I didn't get it. But then the second time, I got a little bit, and the third time, I really started to understand. But I still, even today, I think I can watch that movie again and catch something I missed.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. But that was a long time ago.
In the Star Trek world, if you got hungry, you could go up to a replicating machine and tell it what you want, and it would actually make the food for you instantaneously. You know, bam, now you got a drink or whatever. And that would be cool, you know, if everybody had that and they had access to food, fresh water, and all that kind of stuff. That would be awesome. But on the flip side again, what happens when things go awry? If Murphy's Law kicks in and you order a margarita and instead it gives you arsenic and milk.
There you go.
You know? we don't like people anymore. Here, have your margarita. And this doesn't look like a margarita.
If it did make a replicator like that, I guarantee you somebody would ruin the whole idea by turning around and have it replicate cocaine or marijuana or something like that. You know?
Probably.
Yeah,
you know, they talk about gun control.
People that would insist on having things like that, it wouldn't take very long before they would weed themselves right out of the gene pool.
Yeah.
Right. Imagine somebody who has a proclivity for cocaine having all the cocaine they could ever want. Right.
Would help
themselves with it.
Yeah, they would. They'd also probably smash the market, too, or get shot because they smashed the market in the underworld there. But in the gun control scene, there's 3D printable guns out there that people can actually get the doggone software and get a 3D printer and print out a gun. So it don't matter what it is that you try to take away from people. If people want it bad enough, they're going to figure out a way to get it, you know? And the more that technology advances, and what Thomas was talking about a few shows back about being able to 3D print metal and stuff like that, there ain't nothing you couldn't make if you had the software for it.
Right.
So, what do we do with this, man? There's a lot of knuckleheads out there in this world that just want to run amok, you know, get them an anarchist cookbook and figure out ways to blow stuff up. But then again, I also heard a deal about the anarchist cookbook that was actually a kind of like a psyop to get people who are stupid enough to read the book to blow themselves up. So,
really?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just saying, these are things that I heard. I'm just telling you what I heard. I can't verify it. I'm not into blowing stuff up anyway, but the fact that you have all the technology and you know that this mixed with that does this or whatever, I'm saying if you use it for energy production, that's a good use. If you use it for violence or harm, that's a bad use. So when's going to come the day that people end up start blocking out information, decide what you can see and what you can't see. You know, kind of like China, you know. you're just a citizen. You don't need to know this. So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Nothing to see here. Move along.
Yeah. It's like a conundrum, man. It's like an enigma, a riddle within a riddle, a question without an answer or something thing, you know?
There have been many, many inventions that has bettered man. Most have come from wars, war machines. But however, during time of peace, there's been a whole lot of new ideas and things that eventually somebody, it's really good, but somebody uses it for bad. They're going to do it. Any way it goes, they're going to do it.
Well, atomic technology, you know, it could have been used for peaceful purposes. Tesla technology, it could have been used for peaceful purposes. Like you said, there's always some person out there. When newer technology comes on the scene, you think the government ain't got their eyeball on it? Heck, the military, if you catch the military's attention on something you design, they'll whip the wallet out so fast it'll make your head spin.
Right.
And you have two options, either buy or die kind of deal, you know?
Right.
Yeah, you're going to sell to us, or we're going to seize it. This is national security. You can't have this. But I designed it, you know? You see what I mean? That's pretty scary that that goes on, but heck, that's the world we live in, man. That's why when the whole flat earthers and the ball earthers get out there and argue with each other, I couldn't care less what shape the world's in as far as geometrical, you know, round, flat, triangle, or obtuse, or whatever. I don't care. All I care about is how these crazy people down here are acting, you know. If there's people in the world that are really in need, then we need to help them out. You know, we need to do something to make this world right. And going over there bombing the crud out of people ain't making the world right. It just perpetuates a never-ending cycle of death and destruction and ignorance. You know, at some point, somebody with an enlightened sense of common sense should be able to stand up, shout out to the world and say, hey, hold on a second. We got some cool tools here. We can make some really good stuff. We can make this world comfortable for everybody. Nobody'd be doing without. Let's all get along and let's work together and let's do it, right? Wrong. You can't get the same doggone people to decide to agree on where to have breakfast.
If you get the spot set up to start shouting that out, somebody will come along and protest it, and somebody who wants to hear you will get into a fist fight with the person who wants to protest it.
Yeah.
Yep. Then you got a war going on.
Yep.
Well, if you figured out a way to segregate every single individual on this planet into their own little cubicle and keep them away from one another other than just a little bit of communications, they'd figure out a way to fight about it.
Yep.
So maybe mankind isn't ready to talk to E.T., man.
Oh, man.
And if E.T. even... If E.T. even talked to us, would we even be able to understand E.T.?
You know, the thing is, what gets me is how dumb some people really are. I mean, how stupid can you be to send, I don't even know how to put it in
words. Send a signal out into space to somebody who might want to come and eat your face off, like the movies?
Yeah. Come on, think about it. Think about it. If they've had the intelligence to fly from their galaxy to our galaxy and our world, if they had that technology, we would be like ants to them. They would come over here with magnifying glasses and start burning us just for fun.
Well,
probably even take some of us back to their planet for food.
I think the best part of the deal would have been to do like the spy versus spy, just kind of listen in, eavesdrop, you know, see if anybody is talking out there, you know. But
look, what happened to the American Indians when a higher technology came over? What happened?
Well,
what happened to Australian Aborigine when a higher technology people discovered them?
Terrible things, man.
I mean, come on, folks. You're going to send a message, an invitation in outer space to invite a higher being with a greater technology to come visit us?
Yeah, and you want to talk about communication gaps?
Hold on a second. There's some terms being thrown around here that I think need to be adjusted. Okay. You say higher being. That people with more technology are not necessarily higher beings.
Right.
The people that came here and created all the mess that is going on here now, as far as I'm concerned, were not higher beings. In fact, considering that everybody here was pretty much getting along before these people showed up and had to start creating a fuss and fighting with each other.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at it, you got all these people who are finding any reason whatsoever to polarize themselves against other people that are all calling themselves American, yet they're all still, you know, fist fighting over, you know, this politician or that politician and, you know, trashing places because they don't like what's been going on around there, or they've got people that are basically beating other people toothless and whatnot. It's like you're all Americans, but yet you're still finding a way to basically, you know, create a division between yourselves so you can have an excuse to fight. How is that higher than what was here before?
You're right, Thomas.
You know, and this is a thing too. I don't think we, as a species, will survive long enough to be able to develop that kind of technology to go to another star system unless we evolve emotionally and psychologically to where we're not that sort of entity, that we're not going to basically be killing each other and we'll actually finally be able to work together. I mean, that's an awful lot of effort that has to come together in order to go to another star system. So that entity around that star, if they have the ability to get here, they had to figure out how to work together, which means they had to figure out how to see past the divisionary lies that we are now using in order to, you know, or I should say some of the people on this planet are using to control all the other people around them.
So maybe they wouldn't be violent, you know, maybe it but then
well,
on the
most
other
likely
hand,
they're not even going to make that kind of a journey. They're going to have the technology developed to even build those pieces of equipment that will most likely be able to replicate their own food and everything. I mean, when in Star Trek did people show up from the Federation and just, you know, take over somebody else's place and start eating and killing their children and whatnot? They didn't do that.
No.
They showed up and they had their own, in fact, they had more advanced technology and they ended up usually sharing some of it with them.
Well, the thing is, you got to learn.
What was the purpose? What was the purpose of them showing up?
They were just out there to explore, but they had the prime directive where they wouldn't intervene with a society so that they didn't disrupt the society's growth.
Again, why were they going and making contact with those other species?
To help them out.
Curiosity?
No, it wasn't.
What was it?
Loneliness.
Huh. Well, that's a possibility I didn't think about. But, you know, communications is going to be...
The whole reason they went out was to seek out new life forms and other civilizations. There's only one reason why you go seeking other people out like that. You're going to visit the neighbors.
Yeah.
You don't go visit the neighbors unless you're lonely.
Communications is going to be a key to public safety in an event of something like that, because if you watch the movie Mars Attacks... They come down there.
We are your friends.
Yeah, they said ack, which loosely translated supposedly meant we come in peace. Right before they started shooting.
Yeah, right. Well, they figured out how our communication devices, our translating devices work, and they just lied to us.
Yeah,
like we lied to them. They won't run. They're easier to shoot.
So
shoot, lie at them, lie to them, and then shoot them.
So if aliens show up and the first thing you hear is ack, 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 then run, duck, dive, dodge. Bob, leave, get out of the way.
Go find that old country western song so you can make their heads explode.
Yeah. Well, that dang song literally would make anybody's head explode. That was a terrible song.
So that song is like the nuclear weapons. The only way to win is for nobody to play.
Yeah. I don't know how that song ever even made it through history, man. It might have been on the list of things never to do again.
Like polyester and disco? Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when disco first came in, it danced through the front door and we escorted it out the back. Oh man, but I bet Raymond had disco scene. I bet he was dressed up like John Travolta in his life.
Hey, you got that right. Bell bottom jeans, John trousers.
I bought my first pair of bell bottoms the very day they went out of style. And I got laughed out of school.
A boogie is long sides, which you comb back into a ducktail, and the flat top. It's called a boogie. And I'll tell you one day, I'll think, you talk about an ugly hairdo. You go swimming with one of them things, you get your hair wet. That is one ugly hairdo.
Well, you got to admit, though, it's a lot better. That hairdo there is a lot better than the 50s whenever they decide to grease it all down.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, everybody running around with greasy hair.
I was going to say, were they using flammable substances on the hair both times, though?
Probably.
Yes. My house would burn like crazy, man.
Man, they slick it all back. Grease for peace is what they said, man.
Yeah, oh, man.
Then the women back in the 50s with the beehive hair, dude.
I wonder how many of the women back in the 50s with the beehive hairdo had to set up like Marge Simpson, where she had everything in her hair, you know?
Yep.
She even had birds flying out of it at one point.
Yep.
You got guns shoved up in your bun there. In your hair. Ma and Pa Kettle, man.
Kettle were real people, you know that, don't you?
Yeah, well, you can look back in history, and it's kind of funny looking back to see some of the trends that went on back in the day, things that people wore, you know. Like, for example, parachute pants and those kind of looking silky-looking shirts that they used to wear. I remember one time, real funny story, we were driving down the road, and there's this long, blonde-haired lady standing on the side of the road. And had them parachute pants on, looking good. My uncle's out hanging out the window, hollering, woo, baby, you know. But when we got up beside the person, dude turned around and had a big old ZZ Top beard. And my uncle's hollering, you bleeping, you know. I'm like, what are you hollering at him for? You're the one who was shouting, woo, baby.
We had the exact same situation.
That's false advertisement, man.
We were coming back to North Virginia from Newport News, and we were coming through the Ocean View area, and there was this gal walking down the street with the short shorts on, beautiful set of legs, I mean a bum that was out of this world. I mean, the posterior on this gal was beautiful, and one of the guys in the truck reaches out, these leans way out, these beats on the side of the truck and whistles. And this girl turned around, just like you said, it was a guy with a big old bushy beard. Oh, man. We teased that boy for weeks after that, man.
That's a real hoodlum.
I wonder how many times that really happened, you know?
I'd venture to say more times than people want to admit.
Yeah, I bet you're right.
But, you know, that's people, man, and it's just amazing just to sit around and watch how people react to each other and stuff. Like I said, you get out there on YouTube and you start watching, you'll find videos of people doing some of the craziest stuff. And you know, going out and getting violent with one another. People will literally go out and fist fight each other and videotape it and put it up on the internet for the world to see. If you want to be remembered as an idiot. Yeah. If you want to be remembered as an idiot, that's a good way to do it, you know. Go out there and just do something. Just beat each other up. But how's that fixing anything that you don't like? You know, those folks out there protesting and trashing their own cities and burning down everything and, you know, just making a mess of the place. That's their home they're messing up, you know. And then if I was a business owner, I wouldn't want to go back in that community and rebuild. I'd say, you know, if they're going to act like that today, they're probably going to do that sometime in the future when they don't get their way.
Most likely.
Get the insurance money and leave, go to another community.
Yeah. So, I'm thinking, for the most part, as far as human interaction goes, people create their own problems. You know, now, granted, on the technology side, people are creating their problems, but they might not be looking towards the future as far as what could go wrong. You know, that scientific paper that I talked about where the person was saying that artificial intelligence has already surpassed what we thought its capabilities would be at this point in time, that's kind of scary, man.
Yeah.
You start getting cell phones to decide everything for you, you know, like this is what you're going to have for breakfast if you want to stay alive or whatever, or, you know, I'm going to do your banking for you and all that kind of stuff. It sounds wonderful. It's all, you know, I got this chip in my hand and I get all my phone calls, or I get this eyeball with the computer system I got access to all this information. All I got to do is wander around and be happy, you know. What kind of life is that? What kind of free will is it whenever everything is already done for you? There's no kind of... There's something to be said for adventure, you know. Even if there's things in life that are, you know, aggravating. You know, you go out, maybe get a flat tire, that's aggravating. But you're living life, you know. You're doing something. You see what I'm saying here?
Yes, I do.
And without that, it is. I said this one time to somebody, I can't remember who it was I said to. If you knew everything that there was to know and there was no more adventure to life, what would be the point? You know? It wouldn't be nothing to... There wouldn't be no mysteries to seek. You know, wouldn't be no discoveries to make. Wouldn't be nothing to really talk about. I mean, sure, you could be the guy that stands up on the top of the mountain with that flight of stairs that goes up a mile, and somebody by the time get up there all winded and ask you a question. There's a commercial about that somewhere. He gets up there and asks a stupid question. I mean, if you're going to make that journey...
Actually, I seem to recall that that's Homer Simpson you're thinking of that asked the stupid question.
What question did he ask, you know?
I don't remember. Why are the sprinkles different colors on donuts or something? I don't know.
So that you would make this journey, my son. What? Are you serious? Now I gotta walk all the way back down them stairs. Oh, man.
But what about the people that don't use stairs? They climb up the sheer rock face of a cliff.
I don't know.
To me, I just go hire me a helicopter, you know?
What about the skateboarder who thinks he could ride the rail all the way down the bottom of the steps and ends up bashing his face at the bottom and wondering why?
Yeah, really.
You go back up to the doggone wise man on the mountain and say, hey, why did I just do that? And the man was like, because you're stupid.
There you go. You know, I see a lot of times on YouTube, I watch these videos of these young teenage kids pouring gasoline on their dangle pants and deliberately setting it on fire.
Why would you want to do that?
And hollered, you know? And almost every one of them, I always write the same comment. You know, the really bad thing about this, he might survive, and if he does, he might be able to breed and make more dummies like himself.
Uh-oh. You know, that sounded an awful lot like that totally... Or I don't know what kind of ism you'd call it, but the thing against lawyers,
yeah,
where they say, you know, what's the similarity between what do lawyers and sperm have in common?
What?
1 in 3 million has a chance of becoming a human being.
Man, that's hard. You
know, a lawyer friend of my brother's once asked him a question. He said, what do you call 500 lawyers at the bottom of the ocean wearing concrete galoshes? And my brother said, what? He said, a dang-gone good start.
Dang.
And he was a lawyer.
So, if you're a process server, you probably ain't got too many friends. If you're a lawyer, you probably ain't got too many friends. If you're a police officer, you probably ain't got too many friends. And if you're involved in the government right now, you probably ain't got too many friends. So... Yeah, choose your job source correctly.
Well, according to Trump, he has plenty of friends, but you know...
But he's got a lot of money.
After seeing the people doing what they're doing at his protests, his speech ceremonies or whatever it is, I don't think I'd want those kind of friends.
How many friends do you think he would have if he was broke as a joke, man?
Oh, yeah, no joke. I don't know, Sanders has a lot of friends, and it doesn't look like he started with hardly anything, man. I'd like to know a little more about the secret behind his life, see if he really is that middle class of a person, you know?
I added Barry in here. Did he show up?
Yeah, he's here. Oh, no, he's coming in.
I don't see his little picture thing going on there. Somebody else try to add him in.
Well, let's step back for just a second while you're checking to see what's going on there, and finish up with what Raymond said about the galoshes. I believe the answer to that joke is the joke. What do you call 500 lawyers up to their chins in concrete?
What?
Not enough concrete.
Oh,
I'm gonna end this call just for a second and try to add Barry in there.
Barry in? Okay.
Alright. Doggone it, I got everybody and his brother trying to call. Now I gotta redo this whole entire situation. Recent chats. Tom Anderson. Barry, let's try this. Alright, did we get Barry in here?
They got a white phone on both, him and Raymond both. Scott don't like you, man.
Well, how about you hang up on me and you make the call and I'll go to a music break and we'll get it sorted out so we ain't doing it live on radio.
Well, yeah, okay.
Alright, cool. Alright, everybody, stay tuned. You're listening to Tonight's Roundtable. We're trying to get some more people up in here.
Turn it up.
I'm a- says it's the end of time. And the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. Grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Trumpet.
Well, that is a fine trumpet, soldier. Wow, strong, healthy lungs. Soldier? Soldier? Bah. Soldier? Hello? Can you hear me? I'm getting another call. Listen, soldier, just keep playing the horn and I'll get back to you. Sorry about that. Quiet all day and then everyone calls at one time. Okay, let's see here. Tell me when you can hear me. How about now? Hello? Hello? Listen. Listen to me. Listen to me.
Listen to me. Listen to me, my children.
Listen to me. Listen to me. Listen, children.
Gather around me. The center of my voice. There's girls and boys. Will you make a choice? Well, you say, so you can bite off my toes. Just come out of the head.
Return of the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html on the same website. So, the round table's gotten a little bit larger. We've got, doggone it, we got Rick on here, and we got Barry on here, and we still got Thomas, and we still got Raymond. And so, what we've been talking about here today is essentially, you know, technology. If we was to use what we have available to us today, we could resolve every single problem out there. You know, starvation in the world, put a roof over everybody's head, and you know, it's just how far does a society go before it actually destroys itself with its own technology? And then it on the freaky science fiction side of it, which apparently could be science fact. That technology might get so crazy that it decide that we're not no longer necessary. So, with that said, all this stuff that we got going on in the world today, if we could use these tools that we got instead of being the primitive peeps of the world and using a wrench for a hammer and whatever, we actually took this vast sum of combined knowledge that we've got and the fact that we're able to communicate with one another from great distances and actually share information. Now I would think would be the best time for us to try to get things done, you know, to try to make advancements. Here we are, year 2016, and we've talked about technologies that existed way back in the day and how things worked that could have put us so much farther ahead than what we are today. Now, Barry over there, he's only got like 15 minutes. He said he got to run off out of there, and it kind of sounds like he's talking on one of them old tin can cell phones. How you doing, Barry?
Sitting here on my tin can cell phone, and glad to join you for a few minutes.
I see.
Actually, I'm having a few problems with the computer, but Rick got in and fixed most of today, so hopefully it... I sound okay.
Well, that's another bit of brilliance, yeah. How Rick's able to remotely work on your computer, see?
He's amazing. He went in there and he got TeamViewer going, and he went in there and I was watching me clicking, doing this, doing that. I was lost, but it seems to be working good now, so thanks again, Rick. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we got to adjust the mic setup.
I only have a few minutes here today, so one thing I wanted to bring your attention is that the native people here in the north here, the Tsimshians, the Nishkas, all the bands here are having a meeting in Prince Rupert. I'll post it on everybody's Facebook there. I've already phoned the Skeena Conservation Society and asked for an opportunity to talk for a few minutes down there. And I think they're going to give me about 10 minutes or 15 minutes to speak. But we're starting to really gain attention. What's going on in the ocean is starting to gain attention, and Prince Rupert is literally the talk of the town now, that they're detecting levels of radiation off the coast. Like I said, all these bands are getting together, and they're going to have a big meeting in Prince Rupert. It's going to happen at the Nishka Hall, and I will give you guys the date. I'm going to videotape the meeting, and I've already talked to a gentleman here in town. We're going to videotape it. It'll be videotaped by them also, and they'll be posting it on YouTube, so everybody can watch the video and hear what's going on up here in the North Coast. But it's really starting to wake the community up, what's going on in our ocean.
Cool. So, maybe if you want, we can rebroadcast your meeting there.
I would love that. I want to blast this out everywhere, because I've already had a talk with one lady there at the Conservation Society, and her words is they're becoming very appalled at what they're seeing. And people have to start talking about it. People have to start screaming. People have to start holding their government accountable, because they're not right now. They're ignoring it. And this is a travesty beyond anything I've ever seen in my life. To see my ocean having the effects it's having right now, it just boggles my mind. I ask the human race, man, where is your foresight? Where is your thinking about your future generations? Where is your consideration of what your children are going to be living in the next 10 years of their lives? And why are we as the human race doing everything possible in our hands right now to beat this problem? And why are we as a human race not eliminating nuclear power off this planet? Because we're seeing what it's doing, guys. It's just absolute insanity. There is absolutely no common sense in government, or at least in the powers to be, because this is the most important thing in our lives, and I'm seeing it unroll right in front of my eyes. I'm hearing it in my community. People are talking to me now, and they're going, wow, this is crazy. You know what? I wrote an article in the paper almost 4 years ago about this, and I warned the community. I said, buddies, it was about a four-paragraph article I wrote about this, and I said, guys, it's not here yet, but in the very near future, this is really going to start impacting our lives, and maybe if society had done something back then, even I'm not sure then it would have been possible to stop what's going on with Fukushima, because we know it's right out of control. It is nothing they can do about this situation over there right now. My understanding, if I'm wrong, somebody correct me, but my understanding is this thing is beyond control. There is no stopping what's going on, and right now they're just bandaging the problem and hoping it goes away, but it's not going to go away. And I think we've only started to see the beginning of Fukushima. I think what Fukushima is going to do to this planet is just going to knock people right off their feet. We're going to see mass starvation. The ocean dies, we die, guys.
I think
it's going crazy, Shaziz. It really is. It drives me nuts. Every day I get up and I pray and I ask my Lord Jesus to please explain to me what's going on out there, and please give me the strength to even talk about this, because it tears me apart, guys.
I think the first big mistake they made was using antique technology mixed with modern technologies to the extent it's like, you wouldn't put a wooden wheel on a doggone Ferrari, for instance, because it obviously isn't going to work out right. Well, you're still boiling water, but you're using high-tech radioactive material in order to do so. And so if anything goes wrong and your backup systems don't do what they're supposed to be doing, then you end up with a problem. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, the potential for disasters from nuclear power plants is just starting to sink in on people. It really is, because we're going to see many, many more of these incidents on the planet. It is inevitable that we're going to see them, because we've laid down ticking time bombs all over this planet, right on top of geological events. You look at the clusters of nuclear power plants in the United States of America, most of them, a good percentage are on the East Coast. Well, the East Coast has major tectonic activity happening in the past, and it's going to happen again. A tsunami on the East Coast right now, any kind of a major tsunami on the East Coast of the United States and Canada would kill the planet. It would simple, outright kill the planet, because there's so many of these plants operating. We look at the one that's up at Buffalo Point right now. We look at the other one that just had a fire. Every day, I go on the internet, and there is reports of problems at nuclear power plants. Well, how long have we had them? 40, 50 years, guys? And now we're starting to see massive amounts of problems. We got to look 5-10 years down the road and ask ourselves, what is going to happen and what are we going to do about it? Because we have the technology in this room right now to answer all the problems that we have for power. We don't need it. It's got to come to a stop.
That's a point that I was thinking, getting ready to make when you was talking about that, is that if they get some folks together on a round table such as this, the solutions are already there. It's just about getting somebody's attention long enough to even enact them. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah, we gotta make a common sense pill and send it out all over the world. And everybody's got to take one of these common sense pills. Please.
Because
there's no common sense up there.
They supposedly...
imagine if we all shut down all the power plants. Okay, well then they say, well now, you're in the dark, because we don't have other means to give you power. That would kind of feed into them bringing us to our knees or charging us more, because, oh, well, the nuclear power plants are breaking down and they're old, and so for us to give you good, clean energy, now we're going to have to charge you 10 times for an electric bill. So instead of $100 a month, it's going to be $1,000 a month, so we can save the planet.
Well, they're doing that right now, Rick. But you know what? Let's say bump to them, because the technology is out there. The world's waking up to free energy. I look at what these gentlemen are doing in this room and I say kudos, but these aren't the only people. There is free energy being worked on all over this planet right now. And what we need right now on this planet is a mass awakening of the human race to what is going on in our oceans, what is important to the future, and how we can stop it right now. So we bring in free energy. We plant hemp all over the world. We stop taking down the forests. We eliminate the coal-fired generators. We eliminate oil. We eliminate nuclear power. And maybe, maybe, maybe this magnificent creation will have a chance to come back. But honestly, at this point, guys, I don't know if this Earth is going to survive what we've done to it. I don't. I'm not a scientist. But I read reports every day. I spend hours and hours and hours doing research. I've talked to a NOAA scientist about the blob this year in the Pacific Ocean. Well, the blob last year was one of the largest bodies ever recorded of warm water. It was an average of 4.7 degrees rise in sea temperature. It encompassed about one-third of the Pacific Ocean. NOAA, I talked to a scientist right at NOAA, and I'm going to have this guy on the radio. He said he'd come on and tell you guys what's going on, but they're telling me now that this thing normally, after an event like that, the ocean normalizes. It goes back to normal temperatures. This year, they're telling me that that blob is going to expand, and they're estimating a temperature rise of 1.5 degrees more than it was last year. Well, those implications on the ocean, guys, are just catastrophic. Catastrophic beyond anything I could begin to tell you about right now. And if this is true, then we really are going to see the mass die-off accelerate in the ocean. It's a chain reaction event, a domino effect. The food chain is being disrupted at many different levels. The food chain is meant to survive on itself, and it's going to collapse. It's going to collapse, and then boom, it's done. And what do we do then? We go, oh, well, we better do something about it, guys? No, we got to scream right now, folks. We got to scream. I won't swear on your radio, but boy, there's some times that I could just,
That's understandable. Go ahead, Rick.
I gotta go in a minute, too, guys. Honestly, I gotta go in about 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Rick, and then I gotta leave, guys.
This Monsanto machine and these chemtrails. Killing the bees, like Barry said, if the ocean dies and the bees die, there goes the food supply, you know. We were outside the other day, my roommate and I, me and Bob, and he's walking around the property showing me plants that he's had for years that are withering up and dying.
The trees, you know?
Trees too. He goes up the tree and he grabs the plant.
People are talking about it. Go ahead, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
I mean, this has all the earmarks of being done by design, you know. I think their plan is, you know, they've got these underground cities and food's stored up for 10 or 20 years, and they figure that at some point, you know, they're just going to wipe out everything on the surface and they'll be safe from us hiding in their caves.
Well, one of two things is possible going on right here. Either the folks that are running the show are just flat out ignorant, or they're doing it on purpose. It couldn't be any other option, unless, you know, hey, it was an accident. Really? You're smart enough to build a nuclear power plant, but you're not smart enough to put it somewhere that's not gonna, like, fall in a hole or something? You know what I'm saying? I mean...
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious they're doing it by design. Their papers clearly state that they want to depopulate by 90%, so if they can't do it with vaccines and bad food and preservatives and all types of toxins, then the chemtrails and causing a few tsunamis and earthquakes with HAARP will finish us off, you know?
Well, okay.
I do have to go real quick before I go. There's the biggest conference in the world is going to go on May 17th in Vancouver on chemtrails. Max Bliss is going to be there. I've been talking to all kinds of people. I'm going to fly down for that one. I'm bringing a gentleman from my community with me. We're going to go out and see what's going on with that. I got to go, guys. I love you, but I do have to run, and I'll be on Shake Away this afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific. I mean, I'm going to ramble a bit about what I see going on in the ocean. This is absolutely got to be talked about.
All right.
A great day, guys.
Take care, man.
Love you guys.
Bye-bye. You too.
Pretty bad. Be safe.
So, you know, with all these things that are going on out there, and the average Joe kind of looking at the overall picture, and it seems to be all kinds of overwhelming, I'm trying to point out to people that, you know, even as bad as things see right now, I mean, it's never even over till the fat lady sings, and so far... I don't hear the singing yet. I mean, we still have an opportunity to turn the ship around, but it's going to take some folks getting their act together and doing it quickly, you know? You see what I'm saying?
What do you think is the best way to do that when we don't even have a real election and the people that are running the show well, calling the shots and rigging elections around the world. And,
the best way to do it is to
stop talking about it on the air and start doing something about it. Get together in groups and start actually working on something. Do something.
Do it.
Even if you get 1,000 people all going the wrong direction, all marching off in different directions, one of them is going to be going in the right direction, even if all the rest are going in the wrong direction. And it only takes one good idea.
That's right.
To solve the whole thing.
I think you just came up with the best idea, Tom. We just need to start forming groups and actually doing something.
Even the best of best chess players can be beat at his own game. And we got a lot of brilliant people around this world in every single nation. And if you can get those people to start groups with their own communities and do exactly what it is that we're talking about, researching and pointing out information, talking to their representatives and so on down the line, you know, this whole got to go out and protest thing, it just doesn't cut it. If you watch, if you go all the way back to, like, let's say the Vietnam War, for instance, there were protesters against the war. And eventually the war come to close because the protests were getting completely out of hand. But the thing is, that was just that war. That ain't every other war that come out after that. But the protesters spent a lot of time getting beat up and pepper sprayed and jailed and all that kind of stuff. That's not a smart way to play chess as far as I'm concerned. Don't go out there and shout save the trees while you're sitting there holding a wooden stick with a paper sign. You make yourself look stupid, and they don't care if you protest.
I don't think that was the point you were really getting to there. If you look at what you just said there, what you actually mean is don't go into chess planning on sacrificing every piece you have on the board.
Yeah.
To spite the other player.
You got to be wise. You got to put your stuff out there on the table in a strategic fashion so you ain't giving them all the power. See, that's the thing about a chess player. They will put you where they want you to be. And even in checkers, they will move their pieces and put them where they want you to react. And that's what you see in society today. People reacting to planned events that's going on out there, and how they react will determine on how it plays out. 9 times out of 10, these guys put a lot of thought behind what they're doing to get you to react a certain way, to hate your person because they're a different color or they got a different belief or something like that.
Polarization.
Yeah. So beat them at their own game. You know, turn the politicians off on each other instead of being on the people, you know. And while they're over there fighting amongst each other, we're out here building the new society, the real world, you know, the people's world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you got a bargaining system already set into place before the economy collapses, so what if the economy collapses? You didn't have no money in your pocket anyway. You see what I mean?
Well, the money's all fake anyway.
Yeah.
Collapsing, if it does any damage, it'll all be in people's minds.
Yes.
So.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. The money in your pocket's worthless anyway, but mm-hmm. the bread on your table, it's collateral. You know, hey, I need a little bit of sugar. You mind if I trade you some bread or something like that? You know?
Yep.
That's a real...
And this is the thing, is you can make your own bread. If you got some land to grow wheat on, you don't need money to get bread then.
Yeah, and even your services, your skills and your talent could be traded for things of necessity. So as far as the economy crashing... Okay, people's bank accounts have dropped down in the dirt. You can't go there and buy, get your Federal Reserve notes and then go to the movies or whatever. But, you know, hey, with each other using things, you know, there's going to be things that are going to be worth money someday. You know, as crazy as it sounds, I like to store up a little bit of extra, like maybe some salt or something like that. Because you'd be surprised. During a worst-case scenario when you couldn't go to the store, salt would become a valuable commodity. You know?
Yep.
It's like money, you know, alcohol. Alcohol would be like gold to the guy that used to get drunk all the time, but now he can't because he can't go to the store and buy it. You know, maybe that's a bad example because I don't advocate people go out and drink their lives away, but it's fact that, you know, things that you already got are your money, you know, and the dollar bill that you got all the stuff with, it's gone. You know, in reality, it's already gone. They're playing Monopoly, and the bankers win it. Why is it the banker in the Monopoly game seems to always win? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, my brother and I played Monopoly, and I'd go to the restroom, take a restroom break, and I'd take a look at the deal before I left, and everything's one way, and I come back, and my little brother, he's got houses on his on all his properties. My older brother's got motels on his properties. My little brother's clutching some $500 bills underneath the table because my older brother slid some under the table to him. And I come back and I'm like, what's going on here, man? Y'all didn't have houses and motels before I left. And even some of my properties transferred over to the bank.
That's because you went to the bathroom. Saying is, if you snooze, you lose. You got to keep your eyes on the game, man.
Speaking of snoozing, I think Muddy wants in.
Well, drag him in. Well, Raymond just said it best. He just said, you got to keep your eyes on the game. People want to know how we're going to fix this thing. And the simple is you're going to have to keep your eyes on the game because they're already a step ahead of you. Now with all this technology you got access to and all the communications that we've got, you take that information out there and share it with each other and start building communities online, offline, and actually doing stuff, you know? Do whatever you can to make this world a better place. And bring those folks to the front that have the ideas that are necessary to resolve issues such as Fukushima or the BP oil spill and all that kind of stuff. Because believe me, we got the technology to fix it all. If they have the technology to literally put a piece of plutonium in a ship, send it all the way down to Pluto down there to take a picture, so far away that the sunlight is so weak you could only run a 2-watt Christmas light bulb off the power generated off the solar panels, yet they can produce over 200 watts of power to run their equipment and send a picture all the way back. That same technology could literally be used to bleed off all the radioactivity in Fukushima before it ever even got the water hot enough to do anything. Energy is going to take the least path of resistance.
What were you going to say, Raymond?
Nothing.
You were about to say something earlier when we were talking about groups or something like that, and getting some organizing some groups to work on stuff.
Well, Shazam said, we need to do something. You said we need to form groups, and I think you're right. That's the best idea I've heard so far. And the thing is, you mentioned this several times. I mean, over the past 3 or 4 months, and we haven't done anything about it.
Oh, wait a second. Don't paint with a wide brush, because we are doing something about it. We are networking. We're pushing information out there. We've got projects.
Doing something and having done something, though, are two different states. And if you're still doing something, then that means you haven't done something.
Well,
what's that old saying from Star Wars?
I don't know, but my brain just flipped upside down.
Do or do not. There is no try.
Right.
There's no try, only do.
Exactly.
Well, if you do something, then something gets done, and if you do nothing, then absolutely nothing gets done.
That's right.
Right.
And wherever you go, there you are.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now my brain's back up, right side up again. So how you doing, buddy?
Oh, doing fine. Good morning, Rick. Welcome back to Knights of the Round Table, old man.
We had
a birthday last week. God bless you.
We were talking smack about you yesterday on the Mad Science Show.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
I have
a point I wanted to make. I've been trying 20 minutes to raise some attention somewhere. Anyway, the point is, see, here you got this fund for global warming, and the money disappears, okay? Well, it's just like anything else you fund to the backstabbers and two-faced people. You fund them to take care of global warming, and what do? They destroy the earth with it to create global warming. So you're not helping global warming by funding the same people who are creating the global warming. So that's not an option. But how do you fight global warming should be the question. Because you can't do it by funding the idiots.
You don't.
How do you fight it? You go to the same people and say, oh, well, we need to take care of this, take care of that. And they're going to be like, yeah, we sure do. Yeah, we need to take care of that. And in the meantime, they're laughing and snickering behind you. So the question, the main question ought to be on everybody's mind, and what to do about it. What do you do to fight global warming? What do you do to fight the police state? You can't go to the same people who are causing it.
I can tell you exactly what to do. Exactly what needs to be done. Educate the people. You cannot fight global warming. It is not a man-made situation. It is a natural, everyday occurrence, every 10,000 year occurrence. Global warming is a natural phenomenon.
Well,
the only thing to do, the thing to do, is to educate the people. Global warming is happening. It's going to happen. We cannot stop it. You cannot fight it. What you can do, and the most sensible thing to do, is to educate the people in what's going to happen and how to work around it.
Well, and that's why I did a doggone video on how to properly panic during global warming, man.
What happens when an immovable object stands in the path of an irresistible force? Man has solved this problem 5,000 times in just the past 100 years. You go through it, over it, or around it. I mean, it's just that simple. Global war is going to happen. It happened a few hundred years ago, back in the 1600s. They called it the deep freeze of, the little ice age, or the deep freeze. There were people in this world that were actually partying, having a good time. There were other people that were starving to death because crops were rotting in the fields. If they'd only known, which we do today, they didn't then. Had they only known, then they would have changed the crops they were growing.
Yeah, and do you know that back during that time, there was a popular river or bay out there that they had a huge get-together out there on the ice.
Yes, it was just outside of London.
Yeah.
And people were partying. They were having carnivals and carnival rides and games and cookouts and stuff right out on the river on the ice. You know, I mean, it snowed in July in Canada. People just don't realize it's going to happen, folks. You don't fight it. You work with it. You find out, you let the scientists do their jobs and decide and determine how much warmth we're going to get. I mean, after all,
Here's the thing. I understand that, but that's still not the solution. Here's the deal. The plankton grow. It forms a blanket. It raises the temperature of the water. The more plankton grow, because it's better for them, it forms a thicker blanket. More water evaporates, gets up into the atmosphere. It starts raining everywhere. And you get more of a greenhouse effect. Everything starts raising up. And then it flips over the opposite direction. And then we go to that ice age.
Right.
How do you stop it? The main deal is you've got, let's just say if they're going to go to a police state and all that stuff, how do you stop it? Well, there's a lot of solutions for it, but the deal is nobody wants to follow anybody because nobody wants to stand up. Nobody, and if they do, they get sliced down because he has no support behind him. When is the appointed time to do our toggle? And how do we do that? You can't do it through a war, because they got better technology. So, it's like I said, we need to keep this on our mind. What do we do? Barry Prince, love him to death, man. He's putting the facts out there, and he's trying to let everybody know, and you can tell the man is truly concerned. God bless Barry Prince. I love to see him come in here on tonight's Roundtable.
Well, they say
we need to think about solutions. When we come to the solutions, we need to share them, and we need to see what we can do about it.
You know, Barry Prince mentioned that the oceans have risen, he said, 1.5 degrees. Look, the average person would think, well, that's no big deal. Look, the little ice age.
You don't notice
the big freeze. The little ice age, the big freeze. It was a 7.5 degree change in average temperature throughout the world, and it caused catastrophic effects. Tens of thousands of people died of starvation and sickness because they weren't prepared. Prepare yourself.
Well, and that's why I made that doggone point.
You know, there's an average of 5 degrees difference between weekdays and weekends due to cars alone. How about that?
That's why I made that doggone point about how we build our houses and how we plan our futures. You know, if you know you're going to live in Tornado Alley, why not build your house to be able to withstand 300 mile an hour winds or higher? We got the physics to do it. If you live
Build your house on ground.
Down there by the river between the Illinois and the Missouri line over there, they got houses that are built on these big poles that when the flood comes in, the house just rises up, the garage rises up, and power lines rise up with it. And so they're floating up there on essentially a houseboat.
There you go.
Right? Yeah. So look at the people over there in Venice where they got water. You want to get out and drive to work, you're out of luck because you can't drive to work per se as far as a vehicle, but you can get in a boat and go to work. You see what I mean?
It's a perfect example of what I was saying. You build your lifestyle around the elements in your area.
It's going to change. In this world, the squeakiest wheel gets the grease. And Barry being out there talking to communities and stuff like that is what you need to be out there doing and talking to communities. You know, getting people's attention towards something, getting people activated for it. You know, a politician, you believe it or not, enough people writing to a politician, they take that serious because now, you know, hey, the spotlight's on me now. I got to do something about this to get the spotlight off on somebody else. So either one of two things going to happen. Either you're going to get something done or they're going to pass the buck to the next guy. And whoever they pass the buck to, then do the same thing, you know. You gotta believe that you got power in your words and your writings and your actions. You gotta believe it because otherwise you're just going with the flow. And if the oceans are dying off and our food chain's breaking down, I'd say right about now is the time to get serious as opposed to waiting until it already happens and then you're scrounging for food. I'm not eating tree bark or bugs. All right.
Let's pop an idea.
Yeah.
Let's pop an idea. We should let's fight them on this stuff where we get to go to these green cars that don't burn the fossil fuels. Stop polluting. Stop putting a blanket up there that holds the heat in. Let's get into these green cars. Let's get into these electric cars. Let's stop raising the if we can raise the temperatures. There's cars out there every day, but the difference in the number, just that difference in the number, can raise the temperature 5 degrees between weekdays and weekends. Then yeah, I say the cars are one of the biggest things. Let's get into these green cars and let's fight the government's little deal there. Here we go. I say okay. Well, we're not making enough money off the petroleum on the green cars, so they put a special tax out there. Well, you know what? That's okay. I understand that. The poor whiny idiots up there say, well, we're losing money, so we gotta tax them. But you know, at least one good thing comes out of that. We're dropping temperature personally each.
Wow.
We can band together, and we enough of us can get together and say, look, we want these green cars. We don't really care about your doggone polluting petroleum. Let's get these green cars.
While I don't believe that cars or even fossil fuels for that matter are even remotely responsible for climate change, I do agree that we should be going to alternative energies if at the very least to shut the people up that's over there hollering about the world's coming to an end and get things resolved. I mean, we don't need gasoline. We don't need gasoline.
Kick the bums out.
What?
Let's get into these green cars. The fact that 5 degrees difference between weekends and weekdays, nature doesn't care what day of the week it is. The fact that it does change 5 degrees is proof that, yes, it is the cars.
Well, look, I can go down there in the middle of the city, and I can take a thermometer down there, and I can measure the temperature out in the city, and then on that very same day have somebody out there at the very same exact time measuring the temperature out here in my part of the world, and you're going to notice a different temperature difference. So if the heat is really rising and it should be uniform all across the planet, but it's not, it's colder than crud where it shouldn't be colder than crud, it's hotter than heck where it shouldn't be hotter than heck, it's raining where it didn't used to, and not where it should be raining. And so nature's sitting there trying to balance out everything, and it's all out of whack. Well, you stop spraying crud in the air, and if you're worried about a hole in the ozone layer, stop shipping rockets up through the atmosphere or blowing stuff up on the other side of the planet. Let nature do what nature does best and resolve it all. If you're worried about saving the doggone planet, for Pete's sake, at least support those who are out there doing the alternative energy research that you're talking about you want.
As long as it ain't the government that's saying that they're going to fight global warming. Because it's the government that's causing it. They control HARP, that controls the jet streams, that throw the heat up to melt the ice so they get to easier oil and stuff.
Well, you know what? It's not just the government. It's the people too. It's the doggone corporations. It's the companies. It's the individuals out there. You're driving around in the car because you can't afford repairs on your car, and it's leaking transmission fluid, oil, or whatever all over the doggone street, which is washing down into the creeks. And eventually, enough cars doing that, you got a creek with nothing but slimy fish in there, if that. And then if you ever needed to eat those fish out of the creek, they'd taste like gear lube or grease. And it's just, if you ain't taking...
That'd have to be a massive dumping. Here's the deal. If you look at the fence line, you got a fence out there, and you're a contractor that takes care of landscaping. And you say, yeah, well, you know, I'll put some of this oil down the fence. That'll kill it off. Well, you know what? Yeah, it kills it off because it smothers it up and it won't get no oxygen. 2 years later, you got a worse problem because the oil turns to a high-grade fertilizer.
Yes,
and the grass will grow high. You'll have to go out there 3 times a week to weed eat that fence, and that oil ain't going to take care of it.
Well, that just shows that nature, Mother Nature's in charge, because whatever you don't use,
unburnt
will take back.
Oils aren't the problem.
Oil is organic.
Yes.
Yeah, but the whole thing, guys, the simple of all of this that we're talking about, the very simple of the whole entire mess, is that we got everything we need to solve the problems. There ain't no need to be going out there pouring diesel fuel on your stuff. If you ain't using it, you know, we got tools, we got technology, and if you're worried about internal combustion engines, run your doggone weed eater on water. The technology's been around forever and a day. And for those folks out there that say it's not possible, then answer me the question. Why is there a document out there stating by 2016 the United States military is going to be running their doggone ships on hydrogen?
Right.
All right, well, if they can do it, why can't you? They had water desalination plants back in 1984 over in California where they got a supposed drought. Standing right next to the ocean, they're complaining, boo-hoo, we ain't got enough water to drink. Well, a little preparation ahead of time would have had your desalination plants for just such an emergency that the water didn't come down out of the sky.
Right.
Come on, man.
I believe you're right there. We need to keep these oils and chemicals Chemlon. People overwater, you've got a water problem in your area. There isn't much water. So people are getting these companies to come out and throw chemicals on your lawn, and they water their lawn, even though it's illegal, till it runs down the street nightly and goes down into our water supply. Now, that is pollution. That is one of the... That's a main cause to a lot of the problems.
Then you wonder why...
You got Fukushima, man. Yeah, you think that was by accident? I don't think so. They can still take care of that. But no, they say, let's just dilute it with water and cool it with water. No, it was their excuse to put it out here and fight, fight the food chain. Even the Bible says that the oceans will die. So the things, look, they're doing this crap on purpose. They're not out here to protect us.
Well, however it's coming down, it's up to we, the people, to fix it. We're down to the last 4 minutes of the show. But however all this is coming down, whoever's responsible, follow the money back, find out who the culprit is. But in the meantime, we ain't got time to sit around and argue about it. We got to fix stuff. Because on the path that we're on...
I'm the people who are tearing it up. The cause. Stop funding the cause.
Yeah. We don't have an energy crisis in this world at all. We don't have a lack of resources. What we have is a lack of common sense. Plain and simple.
It's use of everything we have.
Well, I have three words. Education, education, education.
Yeah. We have a failure to communicate. There's where our loss is. We have all the tools. We have all the answers. We have the access to the internet. Now let's use it. Let's keep on doing what these radio networks have been doing and shouting it to all four points of the compass, hoping that somebody will pay attention and get up and get proactive. You see what I'm saying?
Remember what I said. When you walk down the street and you see a problem, you go, man, somebody ought to do something about this. Remember, you're somebody.
Let me put it this way, she says. I'll make it really quick. Somebody's out to kill you. You give me $2,000, and I'll make sure that they can't kill you. Because I'm going to go hire somebody to hire somebody else to kill you. So don't fund me to sit there and keep the other person from killing you, because basically I put it in your mind, and there is nobody out there trying to kill you. Guess who it is? It's me. You understand? And why? That's what the government's doing. We need to stop that crap. Don't fund the idiots.
Accountability by you using, spending your dollar or going off the dollar and bartering or whatever it takes. Accountability, knowledge is power. And if you ain't willing to do it, then you're just going to sit around and continue to complain. You got knuckleheads out there on keyboard warriors out there foul-mouthing everybody who's trying to make a difference and trying to point out ways and solutions. You gotta put those people's feet to the fire. When they're out there acting a fool like that, ban them from your media networks and don't listen to them anymore. You know, just do the stuff, build the networks, work with your local communities, clean your backyard, help your neighbor clean their backyard, and make sure everybody's fed and got a roof over their head. It's as simple as that. You know, we got
words of wisdom.
To get it done.
Amen.
Hey, Larry, you sound just like Don Johnson, man.
All right, guys. Well, we're getting ready to run over, so everybody throw a quick something in there, and we're out of here.
I think that was good sound advice. Ditto.
All right, cool. What about you, buddy?
I did.
Oh, I think I said enough. I'll give somebody else a turn.
Thomas?
I was saying, be careful where you're going to put your effort, your finances, and whatnot too. Don't just start indiscriminately tossing money around. Investigate people instead of spending time, you know, trolling them. Spend some time and find out what they're really about. Find out what they do with their money whenever they do get a hold of it and whatnot. You know.
Yep.
Because I mean, that's the biggest problem that Muddy's mentioning with the government is that. They're using it for foul means. Well, you got more than that too. You got people that when they get money in their hands, they might have good intention to do something, but then life gets in the way and end up blowing it all. You know.
Yeah, cut up their credit
solutions.
Card.
Yeah.
Cut up their credit card and their blank check. What about you, Raymond?
It's just be honest. Honestly, check your sources before you start investing. You know.
Yep.
Yeah, and you might want to stick your credit card in the microwave and zap that little chip that's in there.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say just give a little and see what they do with it. And if they don't do what you expect, then, you know, don't give them any more. Go find somebody else. There's tons of people out there. Somebody is doing the right thing. If you can't do it yourself but you want to help fund somebody, keep looking until you find that person that's honestly doing something already, you know?
All right, guys, we got to go. What about you, Raymond?
All I want to say is education, folks. Learn. I mean, these people aren't doing what they're supposed to do. You learn what to do, and then you do it.
That's right. And my grandfather used to say that if you want something done right, you get up and do it yourself. Words of wisdom, folks. Travel on your journeys in life with wisdom in mind and learn. That's all you can do. You got to get out there. You got to do it. That's it.
And try to learn more, a little more by experience, and stop relying on just reading.
Yep.
Go do some stuff, man.
The more people that's out there of like mind being proactive in their community, I'm not talking about they out there rioting, looting, and pillaging, burning down your own town, and basically throwing away your children's future in that community. I'm talking about getting out there, writing letters to your senators, your congressmen, and if that don't work, write letters to your local towns and mayors, and write letters to each other, and get people involved in actually cleaning up the mess. I got a rake, and you got a shovel, and he's got some garden tools, and we get out there, we make that land look good if we're going to be using it. If not, then stop complaining. It's plain and simple.
Right. Get your hands on a survivalist handbook also.
Yeah.
I keep hearing people saying they're doing research, but then you find out all they're doing is reading what other people have written. So right. They haven't verified any of it.
Well, try it. Before you deny it, get out there and work it. All right, we got to go, folks. Peace and love. You've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Another brilliant conversation that we got more to say. So wait till next week. We'll throw some more on you. Hope you're listening. Peace and love. Share these podcasts, please, and thank you.
Man, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would... Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What? I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
But if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot! Camelot! Camelot!
It's only a model.
Shh! Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're Knights of the Round Table, we dance whenever we're able. We do routines, we call the scenes, we put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam art. We're Knights of the Round Table, our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off from bad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Hey! Hey!
Shaziz the Turbo. All rise for King Shaziz the Turbo and the Knights of the Round.